We're going to start. Hector and Tracy are on their way. They should be here shortly, but we have a schedule. Hopefully we can be somewhat on schedule. It's not fair for people that are scheduled to be held up. So in saying that, Elliot, you have the opportunity to present the case to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I handed out a series of slides that we're just going to be going over real quickly, but I felt that it was probably best for you to see the numbers in front of you. The first one is the history of our budget, and we have taken it over the course of the last 3 years of 14, 15, and 16, with 17 being the proposed executive's budget. It's evident as to how our budget is tracking. We've been truly decreasing over the period of time, and in this particular year, this 577 number is going to follow us through the course of our presentation, but we've been having just about a 2% decrease every year. So then we wanted to juxtapose this against the executive's budget so that you just get an understanding of the trend on that. You could see an increase in the total of dollars relation to the entire budget. With the county size decreasing, we still are watching an increase here. It's interesting to see the increase over the course of the 3 years, especially since it's purported that government is actually shrinking. But that tracks to approximately a 2% increase every year. The other thing that is somewhat misleading is the employee count, because if you're familiar with how the operation is, that there's a number of employees and expenses, while not directly charged off to the executive's budget, work directly under the executive. All you need to do is simply walk into the office to get a better understanding of that. No laughing, please. Next slide. Thank you. Controller versus executive's budget. I mean, it's easy to line up. We're talking two independent offices of government. When we line up the controller's budget against the exec's budget, it's clear and evident that you'll see the decrease percentage-wise and total dollar-wise in the exec's to the increase of the executive's budget. Next slide, please. So then we took the controller's budget as it compares to all elected officials in the county. And again, recognizing the independence of each elected office, I think you'll see that the increases in the other elected officials' offices versus the decrease in the controller's office and the proposed reduction in staff of our office as compared to the other independent offices. And next slide. And here's the trend analysis. I mean, I think that this truly tells the story, and it tells the story clearly. You'll look at the controller's budget as it compares to the percentage of the total budget, and you'll look at the other elected officials' budget as it compares to the total budget. You'll notice the sharp decrease in 2016. Next slide. And we thought that it would be best to do a comparison over the other elected controllers in New York State. We used consistent numbers, and those numbers are consistent to the 2016 budgets of each one of those controllers, and we felt that that would draw the best picture. You could see that Ulster County has the lowest number of staff, the highest number of audits and reports. And you can see where we fit in relative to the other counties that have elected controllers. You'll note, and we also, you know, we often like to compare ourselves to a like-sized county. You'll note Ulster County as it compares to Dutchess County as well, considering they're pretty much similar in size. The next slide. So here's a productivity slide that really demonstrates what's happened over the course of the last 3 years. I think it's interesting to note that we talk about smaller government, but it doesn't translate into less work. And you can see just from the 2014-2015 and annualized number of just vendor invoices and vendor payments that the controller's office reviews on a daily basis, that number has continually shown an increase. And you can see some of the other responsibilities that are done on a daily basis. And when you compare the two numbers of what is reviewed dollars and cents-wise and what is audited from a payroll side, you're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of about $235-240 million. So here's our proposed amendment, and I really need to point out to you that this amended request that is in front of you is 2% less than we originally submitted to the budget office, and we understood that the county's overall budget has shrunk 2%, so it would be in our best interest also to consider that as we put our budget in. So this 577-208 number that you're looking at is 2% less than what was originally submitted. What's interesting, quite honestly, is the driver of the increase on our budget is really the benefit number. And the benefit number is driving up the bottom line by over $20,000, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $25,000. Every other addition to our budget besides the benefit number are really built-in factors. The $3,750 is longevity. And the difference in the personnel line are four CSEA members who have contractual adjustments to their salaries. So in essence, it's flat in a lot of respects until you add in the benefit cost. And quite honestly, you know, we find that as a cost that's truly out of our control. So that is the budget as proposed currently before you. So where does that leave us as compared to controllers across New York State? Well, the proposed amendment that's in front of you leaves us firmly in the middle when you look at what the rest of the elected controllers are doing in New York State. Now, if you were to follow the exec's proposed budget, that would leave us in the bottom of controllers in the state of New York. And as you saw earlier, while we may appear to be in the bottom, we are the most productive controller's office in the state of New York. And where does that leave us in compared to the other elected officials with this proposed amendment? We've aligned our budgets against those other independently elected county officials. I think it's evident, and you have the sheet in front of you, where we stand. You'll track that every other independent office's budget has gone up some considerably. Again, our modest amendment has basically, with the exception of benefit costs, kept us flat. And lastly, and my favorite slide, my mentor and friend Tom DiNapoli, and this is a quote from an interview that Tom did several weeks ago in Dutchess County. I'll let you read it. You know, DiNapoli basically says, and in closing, you know, so besides the fact that I was doing a great job, I appreciate the fact that he said that, he also said in his closing words, so making sure the controller has adequate staff should be a very important priority. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, that's really what we're asking you to consider, is the adequacy of our office. When I spoke to the legislature in its full body last week or the week before, I introduced you to the seven folks who comprise the staff of the Comptroller's Office. If you did a quick mathematical analysis of our average employee salary, and again, I'll juxtapose that against the Exec's Office, because that's the other independent office that I'm quite familiar with, you'll see that our average employee in our office is somewhere in the neighborhood of about $72,000 to $73,000 versus the Exec's Office average, which is about $102,000. So there's about a $30,000 delta right there. And if you see the production that has really come out of our office over the course of the last year, and I like to use 2015 as the date, the rebirth of the Comptroller's Office, because quite honestly, we brought in some highly talented people who have taken the last 18 months to take the office to a level that I have not seen in my tenure there. The ability to work diligently, the ability to really work in a situation where the production level became much higher, but yet our overhead did not. And we were able to do that by balancing that off by increasing some of the employee hours of a couple of staff members, as opposed to bringing in two or three new people with additional benefits and all the other things that would entail. So our amendment, we feel, is modest at best. It's lined up with the decrease of the overall county budget, and I think in comparison to the other independently elected offices in the county, it really finds itself to be equal, if not a little less. Thank you.
I just have to say a couple words. Yeah, I thank you for bringing everything to our attention, but our job as legislators is to look at everybody's budget, you know, all elected officials, the whole budget in general. It's nice that you draw comparisons to, I don't know, it seems like you and your county exec are battling more personally regarding this whole situation than everything. You know, as you look at different budgets and you look at throughout the state, I mean, there's a lot of factors regarding different departments, what the responsibilities are versus one county versus another county. So it's sometimes very difficult to compare to other counties throughout the state regarding what a job of a particular individual, a different department is, because they're not doing the same functions. Elliot, you know, in saying all that, I think my biggest question would be to you, you know, tell us how, you know, according to the charter you had, you know, you have provisions in there to do various things. Tell me how you have saved the taxpayers' money over the years that you've been controller. I mean, and that's a very valid point. And, I, you know, I don't want to compare you to the sheriff, you to the county exec, you to the clerk, or you to, you know, the county or district attorney. I'm comparing you to yourself. Tell me how you can justify your total budget and why you need a total budget in order to do your job, and how are you saving taxpayers' money?
Sure. So you know, if you recall, Mr. Chairman, early on when I approached the entire body, I talked about our office in a lot of respects as the smoke alarm on the ceiling of your house. You know, you went into Home Depot and you spent $10 on a smoke alarm. I don't know if you walk in every day and look up to it and say, have I gotten my $10 worth yet out of you? You know, that $10 worth certainly will be evident when there's a fire. It'll warn you about that. So in some respects, let's take the dollars and cents out of it. We are the county's smoke alarm, or the county's carbon monoxide detector. But let's look on the other side of it. And I don't think we could flip back to the screens. Jay, I don't know if you're capable of flipping back to the screens, but let's go look at the daily auditing of bills. And I think I pointed out to you that we review $77 million on average of payroll and about $156 million on vendor invoices. You know, that's really the diligence that comes into play on a daily basis of looking at those dimes and dollars that are being spent by the county. Now, this past year, we literally stumbled across a few things. You know, $90,000 on a couple of bills of mistakes. $3 million on a contract that the legislature was going to enter into, not to exceed $3 million contract with a school, a foster care school. Is that something that is continual every year? I can't say that. I can't tell you that every year I'm gonna save the county $3,093,000 every year. You know, it would be unfair for me to say that to you, Rich, because it's I don't know.
What is your function that you're able to evaluate? You know, the different accounting functions that you do throughout the county, and that you are able to save. I mean, you mentioned two items. I mean, here's a report that I'm sure you read, came from the county exec regarding, you know, your whole scenario of different audits and various other things. I mean, looking at this, there's some question in there of what you did and how you did it.
Sure, and I have to really, Mr. Chairman, laugh at that report. Why I have to laugh at that report is it's rife with inaccuracies and misstatements. And, you know, the auditing process as we approach it, looks at the facts. We try and take those facts and measure them against performance. When I look at a report like that, it certainly seems like there was a tremendous waste of time by someone or maybe a group of people who really took charts and manipulated numbers that truly were far from factual. And we'll be willing to sit down with you on an item-by-item basis to pull that apart. But I go back to what I said initially, Rich, and that is that you have folks that are looking over the county's operations on a daily basis. Do we catch everything? I can't say we do, but I am going to tell you that there's $225 to $250 million on a yearly basis that are diligently looked at to ensure that the monies are spent properly. You know, and I don't know if you followed a couple of, you know, things over the course of the last few months of reports that we put out. We try and share them with the legislature. There was a report a month ago at DPW, and it was, we called it our walkable items report. You know, those small items and where they are and how we catalog them and how we control them, because it's pretty easy for a weed whacker or a lawnmower or a tractor to disappear. You know, and through the due diligence of the staff, it was discovered that five pieces of equipment were unaccountable for. Now, we haven't said and we haven't taken a headline that, you know, three lawnmowers and two tractors were stolen from DPW. What we said to the Department of Public Works is, you need to be better stewards of your equipment, and here are our recommendations. And we will be back in 6 months' time to see how you've embraced them and what problems have been remedied. I'll give you another example. DSS, and it's a great story, and I appreciate Commissioner Iaposi. I think we're in DSS 2 years ago, was it? And we looked at child care, and we found that there was $43,000 spent on a child care provider that was not in business. So that begged us to question the efficacy of how we're paying this. We made our recommendations to the commissioner. The commissioner embraced them. We went back 6 months ago, we went back and re-audited the issues that we brought up 2 years ago and issued a report commending the commissioner and his staff because they did embrace what our recommendations were and hopefully will prevent any wasteful spending going forward. So those are the kind of things. Are we out there every day? You know, I feel like sometimes we're the traffic cop. We're directing traffic in a lot of respects. Are we out there every day? And can I come back and say to you, you know, Rich, we discovered a $3 million contract this year. We're going to discover a $6 million issue next year. I can't say that. Early on when we started as the comptroller's office, I don't know if you recall some of the issues that were there. There was about $31,000 in uncashed checks in the safe in the health department. You know, that was an issue. There was a gentleman working at the sheriff's department who was embezzling money. That was an issue. There was a gentleman in Central Auto who was caught through our investigations taking county property and selling it out the back door. That was an issue. But, again, our audits open up the doors. We get an opportunity to look, and then we can take it to the next level.
But isn't that your function as a controller to do that?
Correct.
The question becomes that, you know, in this case, can you do it with the staff that is opposed to you, or do you need a staff that you're proposing in order to do that?
I think what I'm proposing is holding the line. And the staff that I have, and I think you'll recall, because we had some spirited conversations several years ago about a reduction in staff, we had two people taken from our office, okay? Mm-hmm. We had some responsibilities.
We had three people. We had three taken.
Two and a half. I like to say two and a half. We got a half back. Rich, we've been going through this issue over the course of the last 7 years, and while I didn't put the charts before this, you would see a dramatic decrease in our overhead and budget in the course of the last 7 years. I think we've gotten to a point now, I like to use the word, we're stealth. We have a great staff who is able to do great work.
And I don't want to go backwards, but I just make one comment. Yeah, we did have a heated discussion because of some of the things that you did that you were told not to do, and you didn't anyway.
I agree.
So, you agree with that?
I do.
Let's make very clear that we had heated discussions.
You were very forthright in your opinion. I agree.
Very much so. Hector, before you go, I just wanted to ask Bert, since he did the cuts, how did he come up with the solution? How did he come up with this of taking these two people?
With all due respect to the controller, in the chart that is even provided here, the 1 year that is missing from that is 2013 and 2012, where the invoices processed were much greater. With the closing of the sale of the nursing home and our move from self-insurance to a third-party administrator, the invoice processing is much less than it has been for those years. With that said, you have been provided the report from my division of ACE. That report speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. And with those two factors in mind, thus the reason for the cut.
But you didn't have this report when you made those cuts.
No. It wasn't final at the time.
It was not final?
No.
The report came out in November.
Sorry. I understand. All right, Hector?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just procedurally, just so I just understand, is this in addition to Amendment 2, or is this in lieu of? And I apologize, I may have already explained that already.
Amendment 2?
Amendment 2 looks like it's Green, Berkey, Donaldson, Fabiano on our list here, or is this in lieu of, is this in addition to, is this a support of?
We haven't gone through this amendment list, so I really don't know. This is what the controller is saying regarding the department head appeal.
Because this looks different than this, because this actually adds in money. This one would just go into the
store. All right, well, we're not talking about amendments right now. Let's just talk about what he's proposing, which is basically reinstating.
I'm just saying because right now you got two different items.
Okay.
So, all right, so, Mr. Chair, you know, you highlighted, it looks like in this request, by the controller, this would still include people above 70 hours per week.
Correct.
That's what it appears to be. Again,
to Elliot, that's correct. I mean, that's how I'm reading. You have
yes.
You had a chart here where you saw some different numbers. Correct.
So it was the policy of this legislature to have people at 70 hours per week, and apparently this just continues on what we were doing before. Okay. I don't even know where to begin, but for right now, Mr. Chair.
So are you asking how many hours they're at? Because I'm going to ask. You're not asking.
Well, that's where I'm kind of going in terms of the breakdown to find out how many people. Well, how many people are at 80? How many people are at 75? And which line items they are?
Okay. So we're getting to that.
Does that create a joint question?
I don't know. You're asking like it's so complicated.
No, it's not complicated. But apparently have two different amendments going on here. That's
right now we have seven employees in the controller's office, from what I have. 1, 2, 3 are at 75, and 3 are at 80.
One's at 70.
And one's at 70. Is that correct, Elliot? That's what I have.
That sounds
pretty good. Repeat that again. I'm looking at it.
I have, not counting the controller, all right, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 employees. Three are at 80 hours a week. Mm-hmm. Two are at 75. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, three are at 75 and one's at 70.
I think it's 535 hours per week. I think that 535 hours is pretty consistent.
One at 70.
Gone down.
But the rest of the county's at 35 hours a week, right, Bert?
Yes and no.
Well, that's 70 per period, but 35.
Is that correct?
For the most part.
Which ones
are exceptions? You have your 24-hour facilities, which are 40-hour workers. Okay. Probation, sheriff, jail.
Okay.
There are a few employees who are on alternative work.
Okay. Thank you.
You're best.
So where did the 80-hour ones, the three, those are the CSCA people?
Yes.
And what is their contract say?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what their contract says. I'm not familiar with the CSCA contract. Those are two auditors and a senior auditor.
Can we find that out?
What's the question?
It's not a contractual.
It's not a contractual, like in the CSCA contract at all.
So hours can be changed?
Sure.
Okay. I guess that's my simple question.
Anyone else?
Mr. Chairman, so we're not actually discussing the amendment. We're only discussing his appeal?
Correct.
Okay. What time is the amendment? Which one is?
Number two. We'll go through department heads, and then we'll go through amendments.
Oh, okay.
All right?
Yep.
Can I just...
Yes?
Elliot, have you looked at the amendment number two, the one presented by... Berkey, Dallas, and Fabiano, is basically restoring the full $200,000.
Right.
What you're proposing is the full $200,000, but not because you put in this 2% adjustment.
When we requested the amendment, we pared down our initial request was at personnel level was 588. It's down to 577. We looked at, we felt that it was justifiable because of the decrease in the budget too. I just need to, go a little further on that. When we submitted our budget, we had a discussion with the budget officer, and that was the one and only discussion that we had. We did not hear back on any issues, nor did we know that there was any reductions in the horizon. And the only way we found out about these reductions was, and by the way, not invited to the budget rollout either, and I can understand why after the fact. The only way we found out about these reductions were the day after the budget rollout, which, we brought to question, too. I mean, if there was an issue with the budget department, if there were things that could have been or needed to be adjusted, and it has happened in the past. I could recall working with J.J. Hansen for a couple of years and working together to try and craft a reasonable budget. But this was brought to us, and not only was it brought to our attention, but I've never seen a budget document like this. I've never seen a budget document that expresses in brackets a reduction of a budget without directing that towards a specific line. And I don't know if the legislature is aware that after the budget rollout, it was followed up by a letter to our office from the exec, who claimed on October 3rd that the reason why he was reducing our budget was because everybody in the county needed to take this hit. Well, I turn around and share the fact that, as the budget director said, the county government is shrinking, but we're the only one that shrunk. When I look at the other independently elected offices here. That being said, I queried the executive on October 7th, and I said, well, can you provide me with a justification of what's behind this reduction? Again, being blindsided by it without being invited to the budget rollout or hearing from them, and didn't hear a thing. And to this date, I still haven't heard a thing. The only way that we're aware of this this misleading report is it was provided to us. And the report was dated November 16th, I think. So I'm hard-pressed to understand, the principles and priorities that go into that reduction to begin with. That being said, I shared with all of you the caliber and quality of work that comes out of our office. You see the volume that's being done. We're also, totally aware in any one of our audits that we provide the auditee with an opportunity to respond and correct our reports if need be. And I'll even go beyond that. If there are any issues with our reports, amend them and correct them as well. So we're conscious of that. We live in a world where we recognize blind spots, we make recommendations, and we hope to embrace the remedies for them. That's our world on a daily basis. So when I see things or I hear things, as Rich alluded to, this report, and then once we pulled it apart, we just have to laugh. I mean, it's a witch hunt, and I'm not telling any tales out of school. I had a conversation. I made an appointment to see the exec yesterday. Still waiting for that phone call and that report, so I took it upon myself. And, it's clear that this certainly cast a cloud over the independence of our office. We have a modest budget to begin with. As we line it up against other people's salaries and look at what it costs the county, which is 0.25%, which is what our budget is when you look at the overall number and see what we do, we think that the amendment is justified.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Can I ask the Director of Finance a question?
So formal.
In the charter, section A9-6, it says bond of controller. And it says that we approve this bond. The controller and such of his officers, deputies, employees of the county legislature and the county executive shall acquire surety bond to the county in a sum fixed by the legislature. What is that?
Well, as all of us are employees, we're bonded by the county with surety bond.
And that's a monetary?
For instance, Carl, I carry money around to the bank. It's covered by insurance.
Okay. All right, so this is like an insurance bond?
The legislator are under that. Ellie, we all are. Yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, when I was a kid, I worked at a gas station, and they told me I was bonded. I didn't do anything.
What does this mean? We're bonded.
Bonded. What's that process?
Money's gone.
In the event
the insurance company will be responsible for that money.
Oh, okay.
We pay, an annual premium for that.
Yep. All right. And that's something we have to
normal.
I don't remember ever.
I mean, it's more to do with people that are actually dealing with money more so than legislators. They're not really dealing with money.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Hector?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Comptroller, just quickly, not to go and have this go on longer, but what's the story with the 25 audits that are not on the county website?
So, again, not having the ability to respond to this misleading document, we did some research. We looked at that, and I was quite surprised when I saw that, and quite honestly, hard-pressed to figure out what those audits would be. Then I realized that up until 2015, late 2014, we did not control our website. Our website was controlled by Information Services. So I went back and I checked some of my records. What we would do is send our report to Information Services and ask them to post our report online. A couple times, and again, following my emails, and I could certainly share them with you, we raised questions with Information Services of where is the reports? Where are the particular reports? We cited a couple of them. Got an email back from Information Services that the links were broken, meaning you couldn't access the report. We had asked to have them repaired. They were never repaired. So what we've been doing, again, I'm sorry I didn't see this misleading report that was put out earlier, because we probably would have had them, whatever they were, all up online now, because we have gone back into our history, which goes back to 2009, and tried to identify each one of those reports and bring them up and put them online ourselves. Now we control our own posting, so it's made it somewhat more seamless. But there was an amended report that never showed up online. There were a couple of other reports that came to light, and I'll be more than willing to share that
with you. And you're no longer using a separate server, correct?
In regard to what?
At one point, you actually had a cloud-based...
We still do. We still have a cloud-based server for certain documents. It's...
You know, because I was told that that was actually ended. So is that
well, we're not correct? Using it now. We still have the cloud-based server, though. You know, we're a little fearful of the integrity of the county's server at times, so we had put a subscription of the cloud-based server in place in the event of. And if you read the management letter just recently from your own independent outside auditors, they raised the question 2 years in a row about the integrity of the data and what happens in data recovery. So that, you know, that when we read it the first year, that made us pause to say, should we put something in place in the event of? Now, right now, on our cloud-based server, there's nothing on it. I can tell you that.
Any other questions? Jim?
Ellie, just a question. The charter says to do that.
Sure. There's Alicia.
You actually check, balance the checkbook.
We reconcile. There's 50-plus bank accounts right now. And you know, again, I speak to the caliber and quality of people that work in the office. Alicia, one of the first things she did when she came in, and Alicia's a certified public accountant as well, is design a plan so that we can continually carry out our charge of reconciling the bank accounts. And it was a back and forth, and I'm sure the Commissioner of Finance could attest to it, too. There was a couple of years there where there were some questions as to how accounts were kept, and we didn't have a fine understanding of it, and we were able to really use the assistance of the Commissioner of Finance to get our system in place, and it's done on a monthly basis.
Jim, basically, there was some concerns that was not being done, all right, up until probably
2 years ago.
2 years ago, it was not being done.
And there was,
and
a
there was
series
confusion.
Of
the auditor brought it to our attention 2 years in a row, 3 years in a row. We had meetings with the auditors. We did finally have a resolve regarding who is going to be responsible for what. And at this point, from what I know, everything's on track, that everything is good.
Every single one.
Alicia, right? So everything is fine now.
The charter was not being followed.
It was not being reconciled, correct.
Right.
For whatever reasons, I mean, I think there was on both sides had some batting heads.
Rich,
and I think they resolved it, and then it's done now.
Rich is being kind. Rich was a referee.
Well.
There was certainly, and again, we document all our work. There was certainly questionable practices that we needed to smooth out. And we keep a paper trail of every time that we would query the Commissioner of Finance and his folks, every time they would get back to us. And there were some real bumps in the road, Jim, and differences of opinion. And through the audit committee and through Rich's guidance, we were able to resolve those issues and through Alicia's professionalism put it in place.
Tracy?
I'm just going to just raise this right now because we have a lot to get to, and it's not exactly on point. But to hear from a department that they're concerned about the integrity of our server, and that department employs its own cloud-based system, you're saying, in fact, but here we are, it's the county legislature, there are concerns about the integrity of our server. We ought to be...
Read the management letter about data recovery. Just, it's not up, you know, and we raised the issue a couple of times. It's not simply us. And... From a personal experience, and I don't want to belabor the point, you're more than welcome. We've also noticed as we work within the confines of our own server, we question sometimes the security of it. Seeing some things moved and folders gotten into. So
that's no small sound.
I agree with you, and we've raised that.
Tracy, you're 100% correct. I mean, it's a whole issue that we should probably...
Right, that's what I know. It's not part right of this now, but it's a
conversation.
If there's validity, right. You cannot just let go by in a sentence in a budget hearing. I'm just saying,
he's going to look into what the problem is, what the whole understanding is, and it'll come back to us, and we'll have it done before budget time. Hector?
So, just one last thing. So I'd asked about a month ago.
You said that 20 minutes ago.
Maybe this time I really mean it, Eric. So, I had asked Evan a while ago with understanding who's doing what in the office, both in terms of, you know, specific responsibilities. And part of the reason where that was going was, as you know, when we passed a charter amendment to reduce basically almost half your sort of responsibilities, we, Mr. Chair, as you noted, took two positions put them in finance to basically continue that role and left, you know, one behind. So really, by leaving one behind, what became of that person's responsibilities?
Right.
And in essence, we sort of added an extra person and cut the responsibilities in half. So I kind of want to understand how the work is sort of like divvied out at that point.
I wouldn't say in half, but I do
believe half.
I do believe that when the charter was first designed, they did create a schizophrenic relationship in the controller's office. You can't be the auditor and you can't be the accountant. Am I right, Bert? It's like physician, heal thyself. You can't do both. So I was very pleased that that was remedied. And two of our folks, our accounts payable folks, went over to finance department. No question about it. So we do not, as part of that, we do not do the accounts payable. There's no question about it. So I don't know if you recall that when I originally stood before the legislature in its full body at the original public hearing, I explained the duties in our office. We have two auditors. Those folks are claims auditors. They are CSEA members. There's two senior auditors that are field auditors.
But in terms of specifics, so who's working on what?
Well,
that's the part that I haven't got.
So the field auditors are responsible for the 30 to 32 out in the field audits and reviews. The claims auditors are responsible for what you saw daily, which was the $240 million worth of reviews of vendor invoices and paychecks. But there are times where both of them intersect. So the claims auditors will work with the field auditors on projects out there and be responsible, for example, spending trackers and cash receipts and other reports like that. And the senior auditors will come in and help with the claims auditing. On top of that, there's the director of internal audit and control that really works with the entire auditing team, the deputy controller who does not just work with the entire auditing team, but does a lot of the crafting of the reports, the checking, the legal side of the equation, so to speak. And then there's our confidential secretary.
So you have two people basically in a way overseeing audits?
No, because our director of internal audit control also manages about 20 different programs that she oversees on a daily basis, on a daily or weekly basis. So it's all integrated. There's no clear delineation. In other words, one person doesn't dig the hole and the other person doesn't operate the backhoe. Everybody is cross-trained to do everyone else's jobs because there are times where people need to pick up the slack as work increases in certain areas. So there's nobody saying in our staff and raising their hand saying, that's not my job. It's everybody working collegially together to get the entire work done.
Right, Hector? Any other questions?
I wanted to point out a couple of things. If I was looking at, I was kind of curious about some of these statistics where they're comparing and contrasting us to other controller offices around the state relative to the size of the budget, size of the county. Some of the data is up here, size of the population is not up here. So the closest county in size that we have relative to us on the list of all controller offices in the state of smaller counties would be Oneida County. I just left the room to research it. They have a population of 232,000 plus. Ours is 182,000 plus. So the budget amount, we have a 17.5% lower budget. The overall county budget is like 15.25%. The population, it comes out to about 20% lower. And then we have, they have 11 employees, we have 8. So relatively speaking, I guess that's, we have about 28-30% less.
And each controller, legislative, Alan, has a different charge. And that's why we felt that comparing it to the overall budget was the fairest part. But Joe Timpano, who's the controller in Oneida County, has, I believe, a staff of 11. You'll see in Suffolk County, the 2016 budget shows that he has 100 employees. He doesn't. He has 110. And he told me the other day he has 10 vacancies he's yet to fill. But when you look at their budget of billions of dollars and you compare, it really is hard to line us up against it. So we took our budget relative to the overall county budget in order to give us some sort of an ability to do a comparison.
Yeah, I mean, relatively speaking, I don't know what exactly that amounts to. I just thought it would be interesting to point some of these statistics out. throw them out for discussion.
Sure. And I don't know if you have the latest handout that we did on the slides, but I'll give that to you. And there's a chart there that a really up-to-date chart that compares us to the other seven elected controller's offices.
Because I know it's been that we're the smallest county with a controller's office in it, so I think it makes obvious sense to sort of look and see what the next smallest county in New York is.
Any other questions? If not, Elliot, thank you very
much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Always a pleasure.
Yes. And moving forward, we have our DA, Holly Cartwright. Holly's basically asking for an investigator, which was not funded during the budget process. Mr. DA, how are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
You sure?
I'm well.
Okay.
I'd like it if we had a few less homicides this year, but... I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the information that I submitted, but I'm sure all of you are aware that we have nothing short of a heroin epidemic here in Ulster County. I have some statistics that I could share with you. I was going to bring some charts and such over, but the fact is that one of the problems that we have in the county is the gathering of accurate statistics in this regard. One of the processes that Paul Van Barkum and I put together were to try and have all of the law enforcement community, when they respond to an overdose recently, give us a report so we can start to track some of this information. The problem is that many of the overdoses that we see in Ulster County are not law enforcement calls. In the city of Kingston, for instance, the first call is usually to the fire department. Many of the calls will be people taken directly to the hospital, so you have EMTs and hospitals. And none of these organizations are keen on sharing data with the district attorney, which is one of the things that we're asking in this process, to have a central location for data that we can all rely on to look and see. But it is clear from anybody's data that the heroin problem in Ulster County has escalated to a point of epidemic proportion. The governor, in his most recent budget, put quite a bit of money aside to deal with the heroin problem, dealing with having beds available and counseling and treating addiction, all of which is, I think, critically important. The county itself has a county task force. There are independent individuals of non-government agencies that are dealing with the heroin problem, but none of them deal with the source of the problem, which is the heroin, which is the availability of heroin here in Ulster County. And that's something I think that falls on my shoulders, and that's why I'm here to seek some help for that. One of the questions I anticipate, and I hope you'll ask me some questions, one of the questions I anticipate is that, well, can't you accomplish what you're trying to do with the resources that are currently available? And there are some problems in the format that we have right now, which I'm not finding fault with any of this. I just want to try and advise you about the situation. So our countywide response to the heroin problem is the Urgent Task Force. And the Urgent Task Force is hugely successful. It's a very critical part of what we do here in Ulster County. But the fact is that Urgent isn't part of the – there are many communities in the county that are not part of the Urgent Task Force, notably the city of Kingston, the town of Sorbides, the town of Ulster, Northern New York State Police. And that runs into problems, which I understand. I've talked to a lot of these agencies, a lot of these municipalities, and said, look, we ought to get together and have one unified front here. But this guy from the city of Kingston says, well, you know, I have my own department. I'm not really interested in taking orders from this guy over here in this department. This is my job and my responsibility, and I take that seriously. And so there are problems with trying to set up a unified countywide task force. And I think I'm the solution to that, because everyone deals with the DA, whether they like it or not. I am the center point of all prosecutions, and I can be the center point of all investigations as well. And I, frankly, have developed, our office has developed a really a very good working relationship with all of the law enforcement community in Ulster County. So if I had an individual that I could assign to the heroin problem, that individual could work with Urgent, it can work with KPD, it can work with Saugerties. That individual can work with all these agencies and not only gather information, but to help investigate and prosecute heroin in Ulster County. So that's the gist of my my argument. The gist of my argument is that we would like to have one investigator that I can assign to this problem. We have expanded, thank you, this is a thank you, we have been able to expand the investigative services in Ulster County since I've been on board. We started out with really a person that used to serve papers to a point where I have a full investigative team. I have three investigators that work at the CAC, that's the Child Advocacy Center, and that's, they are partially funded through social services. I have an investigator that does nothing but domestic violence and investigations into social media, things like that. I have investigators who we have taken great advantage of this I'm retired but I don't want to stop working situation, and so we have them working, they're collecting retirement, collecting their benefits through another resource, and we pay them on a part-time basis to work in the DA's office, and I have a really outstanding staff of people, and we're good at what we do. I don't know how else I can say that without sounding like I'm bragging, but we are really uniquely good at what we do. People come from other counties. They work with our office and say, well, you guys got the program. We're uniquely successful at the prosecutions and investigations that we do. But we're not getting the job done on heroin, and that's the simple fact is I don't have an investigator that can work. You know, you really have to be on the ground. You have to develop information. You have to work undercover. And you have to gather and share information between these agencies. The guy who's selling heroin doesn't care if he's in the city of Kingston or the town of Ulster or serving. He's going to go where the market is. And then the law enforcement has to do the same thing. And we're simply not getting that job done right now. One of the things that I think this group does is look at money. Is that what you do?
Yeah, fortunately or unfortunately, yes, we do.
So let me make this observation, and I wish I had more concrete information for you, and maybe that's something that...
Hollywood, wish we had more money, too.
Yeah, I do, too, I do, too, and you've been very kind to me. I'm not crassing. But let me make this observation. If you check, I bet you'd find out that the cost to your constituents, the cost to taxpayers of taking care of a person who is addicted to heroin would far out exceed the expense that I'm asking for to hire an investigator where we can start to cut out of this problem. The simple fact is that when you're addicted to heroin, you are addicted to heroin. You don't get unaddicted, period. You may enter into recovery period. You may do well for a period of time, but you'll always have that addiction. And in order to get to the point where you can even function, the county provides very expensive services to each addicted individual and family. So if we can look at it strictly as a point of view from cost management, I would argue to you, you can't afford not to take an opportunity that we have here to cut out on the, to undermine the source of heroin in Ulster County. So I'm going to end up in a minute, not yet.
Okay.
I'm going to end up in a minute with a quote from our 2016 Nobel Peace Prize literature recipient. But before I go there, let me make this this observation. If you think about the number of deaths that we have had here as a result of heroin in Ulster County, on a very serious note, we have had more. You think about the deaths that occur through gang violence, the deaths that occur through domestic violence, DWIs, car crashes, not even criminal matters. You add up all the deaths to the people you represent in Ulster County, and all of them together are not as many as the people are dying from heroin. So, as Bob Dylan would say, how many deaths does it take before too many people have died? Questions?
Carl, before you go on, Bert, in the budget that was not funded, can you give us a reason why it was not funded?
I think the one reason, and I did speak with Holly briefly, was that it's specific to the city. Holly says that's where the heroin originates, per se. The other thing is, too, I know he has part-time investigators. I don't know if there's a way you can repurpose one. Bring that to the DA, too.
Sure. So both of those. So when I talked to Bert afterwards about the lack of funding, I had presented, I thought I was being a good boy. I thought I was trying to do something good. I said, all right, I'll tell you what, you give me enough money to get this thing started, and I'll go down and talk to the mayor and have him give me some money from his budget, and the two monies together, we can hire a decent guy or gal, somebody, and put them in full time, and we'll station them. They'll be my employee, just as the people at CSD are my employees. But we'll start in the city of Kingston. We'll put them down there, and that upset the apple cart. I didn't foresee that. I thought that was a good thing. It turns out it was a bad thing. And so in my application,
and whose today, eyes was it a bad thing?
Funny.
And whose eyes was it a bad thing?
Well, apparently it was a shutdown right there.
Yeah,
like,
I also
we can't do
want
that.
To make sure we tried to get a budget here where there were no new positions. And
that
was another reason. Okay. I don't think there was mutual support between the city of Kingston
needed. Well, it's funny because when I talked to the mayor, he was receptive to that. Not numbers, we didn't
right.
sit down, but it was a little bit, you talked to Mike, and Mike said, well, what's the mayor say? I talked to the mayor, and he said, what's Mike say?
The mutual agreement wasn't there.
I agree that.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Would the city of Kingston contribute anything financially?
I don't want to. I can get back to you.
Would you please?
Right away. No. But that was my first proposal. Now, the only thing is, if we do it that way, and Bert talked to me about this, and I said, okay, that's true. I don't know that I want to have a person that's only requires to be in Kingston. I mean, these other, we just had a, I won't go into, we just had an incident that required a lot of help in my office, and I called the McCoy over to CAC, and I said, the two guys that are over there, I need them in my office tomorrow, I need you to do this, this, and this. And I need that flexibility, particularly with heroin. Suppose we get some information from CNET down in the southern part of the county. I want my guy there. You know, I want to be able to pull my guy out of the city of Kingston and go down there. And I would have, because he's a DA investigator, he'll have jurisdiction everywhere. But I don't want to mislead the mayor and say, I'm going to increase, I'm not having the county pay for a detective for you. I'm asking the county to pay for an investigator for me. And so that's something I'd have to talk to the mayor about. When I first presented this to both sides, I envisioned somebody that would sit down there and work with Robinson under Titty's office, and I'm kind of reconfiguring that now.
Well, I'm sure you could have a conversation with him that, you know, probably half the time could be in the city, the rest of the time could be throughout the county, that you would...
And that's really how I see it, Rich, because I think that in my experience, almost all of the heroin sales, originate at some point in Kingston. We do a lot of car stops, we do a lot of investigations in other parts, but at some point, the city of Kingston is involved in most of the heroin that's brought into the Ulster County.
Right. So you can have that conversation with the mayor, myself, and
yes.
Let us know what
you Sure, situation. Sure, I'll do that. As far as the part-time, but 1 minute.
Just quickly,
I don't see how the part-time is going to get the job done. That's really the bottom line. I need the scope of the problem. I need somebody that's going to come to work every day, probably more than 8 hours a day.
Carl first, then Tracy. Right.
As to statistics on deaths, I found it very hard to actually get figures on deaths. Now, we've got from the EMS Council... We've got figures on how many Narcan inoculations were given how many overdose calls they had.
Yep.
But it's very hard to actually come to a number of deaths or even overdoses. The one constant you could probably get is the Narcan.
I'm keeping track of that I get in the paper.
I understand that.
It's
I mean, as a UCAN member, you know, we've even had... the health commissioner come, and the deaths were surprisingly low. I didn't believe that report, but if you want to help the victims of the heroin epidemic, okay, I don't see how adding another law enforcement official, one law enforcement official, is going to help the victims of overdoses or the families destroyed. I tell you what I'd like to see is another round at trying to get, if it's not county's urgent task force, maybe another task force. I don't know. Counties and states, cities all over this country are dealing with the same thing, and I just don't know if adding another law enforcement official is going to, it's not going to help the victim. It's going to get people off the street, although I doubt it's going to do that much, because I think it needs to be a collaboration between police forces throughout the county and state and federal governments, like that big bust we had 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't see the effectiveness of one person. I honestly would like to see more money spent on, for instance, a program in the jail. When inmates are incarcerated and they're addicted, whether, you know, anything, opiate or heroin or whatever, they're cold turkey as soon as they get in there. And as soon as they get out of jail, I don't know if it's a 30, 60, or 90-day stint, they go right back to heroin. And they think that they've kept their tolerances up, and they shoot up again and kill themselves. And that's a cost to society, that's a cost to the county, and that's a cost to the taxpayers every time someone dies from an overdose. So I don't know. I mean, I'd like to hear how effective this would be. I mean, if it could take one drug gang off the street, I think it'd be definitely worth $90,000. But do we have any realistic expectation that something like one person is going to make that happen?
Well, I do. I do. And as far as I don't disagree with the word that you said, Carl, about victims, and this really isn't a program to help addicted persons. This is my goal is to stop the open sale of heroin in Ulster County. I dare say everybody in this room tonight could drive down to Kingston, get out of the car, and score a bag of heroin. Now, that's pathetic. That is pathetic, but that's the truth. And we need, and I need to stop that. And so, as far as the effectiveness of the program, you know, all of these things. Hey, I come to you in the past, and I said I need help on domestic violence. You gave me that help, and I've showed you that I've got the job done. I mean, I guess I'm coming here and saying I have a reputation, I have a history. When I come to you and I say I think I can get the job done, I think I can get it done. If I can't, next year you're going to pull the money. I get that, all right, and that's fine with me. But I have been very successful. And I've been very straight up on this. On when I come to you and I say, I think I can get this job done, I think I've given that to you. The reason that one person can make a difference is because that one person is a member of the DA's office. And everyone deals with me. Everyone has to deal with me. When I send out a note, say, I need this, people say, okay, the DA wants this, I got to get it done. They can't say no. When urgent contact somebody and say, we have an undercover that we're working in this area and we want to do that, They can cooperate or not cooperate with that situation because they're not part of the task force. And I can't. Paul and I have gone to meetings. We've talked to people all around the county. Say everyone needs to be part of a countywide task force. I don't have the power to do that. I don't have the power to go to Sorgatys or the town of Ulster and say we now are going to put somebody in the urgent task force. If I had that power, I'd do it. Okay, I don't. I do have the power with your funding to take an investigator and be part of this process. And all of that part, we bring back all this information to a central location. We start to share information about dealers. We start to share information about informants. We start to share information about addicts. We can do it. I have the people that can do that job. All I can say is I'm the only one, unfortunately, I'm the only one in the county that I know of that is positioned to make this difference.
Well, so I have some of the hand by talking about dedicated beds and individuals, and
yes.
I haven't yet seen any statistical analysis of what kind of resources exist there for people who are addicted and are in the cycle and are users and therefore are criminals. I mean, you're breaking the law when you're using these drugs, and I don't even know the statistics of people who have found their... So I don't know if it's out there or exists.
I don't have any numbers for you, but I can tell you as a policy, we try and get addicts into treatment. We try and get sellers into jail. So that's the general outlook. That's what
and again, for $60,000, I'm not sure back from what the mayor said But how exactly the interface, first of all, what the difference is in terms of the duties, how it's distinct for your office versus an officer of the law, and if your office is going to be focusing on Kingston first, that's something that Urgent is doing. Isn't Urgent focusing
on... Okay, so let me try and answer this. You got a couple questions.
And then let me throw out the last one. Okay. That gives me the greatest concern when you said, and I don't doubt you because you see this probably more than anyone, when score on the street right now, that you have no doubt. The question for me is, why aren't those people being arrested? If I could go find them right now, why isn't law enforcement making an arrest?
Okay, so you ask a lot of questions. The first thing is, Urgent's not part of Kingston. Urgent doesn't do investigations in Kingston. Urgent has information about Kingston. Kingston has information about countywide heroin distribution, but those two aren't on the same team. And so the genesis of this request is that I am the central conduit. So I'm part of Kingston, I'm part of Urgent, I'm part of every agency in the county.
But can I interrupt just
sure.
to clarify?
Sure.
Does that mean that our law enforcement that isn't Urgent, if they see someone breaking the law in relation to... I'm not Urgent, so I'm not going to make an arrest.
Not at all. It just means that Urgent doesn't... they don't patrol mm-hmm. in Kingston. They don't have... they don't develop... Generally speaking... If you go up to a person who's selling heroin and said, "Hi, I'm a member of law enforcement. Would you sell me some heroin?" They're going to say, "I don't know what you're talking about." You got that. Okay. So they have to develop. These are complicated processes. And as you can imagine, some of the people they're dealing with are really, really dangerous people. So it's a very delicate process to develop information. It develops over a long period of time. Many of the informants we use are people that you wouldn't want in this room with you. There are people who have committed crimes. They are people who you generally don't want to associate with, but we debrief them and say, okay, we know that you can find heroin for us. Tell us who's dealing, and we go through that process. It's a long process, and then the next step, you try and get a buy-in to them. So normally, the first time that informant will make a buy-in, we'll wire that, we'll listen to it. The next time, we try and make an introduction and try and get a police officer involved to make the buy directly, because the police officer can testify where the informant is useless. It's a hard process. It's a dangerous process, and the people that we deal with are really good at it, but they're not on the same team, and that's what I bring to you. Sure, the one question you asked is, an investigator, what is an investigator? Investigator is a law enforcement officer. Carries a badge and a gun, has all of the training and all of the same rights and responsibilities as any detective from the Sheriff's Department.
All the same?
Yes. Yeah, they literally go through the firearms training, they go through the...
But I mean, they can make arrests all the same?
Oh, sure. We do all the time. Yes. But the problem, the hurdle that I'm trying to overcome is that... We need to have a common front, and I think that I mean I'm open to suggestions, but this is the only thing I can think of to have a common front.
Well, and I think if I can just follow on what you've raised to me a glaring failure and a tremendous amount of money, and if in fact Urgent all heroin moves through Kingston, if Urgent it has no agreement with Kingston, that is a massive problem, a problem bigger than one investigator, and one investigator may or may not be a way to bridge the gap, but
well,
it's a very big problem that I'm...
There again, Urgent does go into the city of Kingston, correct? They know what's going into that area, they're going to go into that area, you know.
They're
not going to turn their backs on and say, hey, we're going to have to deal with it.
Right, I mean, it's not a situation where if somebody runs to the border, they stop it.
But they don't
conduct their investigations, the genesis of their investigations in the city of Kingston. They generally work most of the county. CNET's the same thing. The New York State Police are not a member of Urgent. New York State Police are terrific at what they do. They were instrumental in the largest drug bust that we had about 4 years ago. We took 80 people off the street. Okay? CNET was part of that. But that what happened there, honestly, is your district attorney got a hold of CNET, got a hold of Urgent, got a hold of KPD.
What is CNET?
CNET is the New York State Police narcotics investigative team. That's their Urgent, New York State Police. And they generally don't work in a county unless they're brought in for a particular reason. They don't have a large presence here in Ulster County. But in that particular occasion a few years ago, we took 80 people off the street. We met in my office. I brought everybody in. Said, this is what we have to do. It was a gang and drug investigation, hugely successful. And that's that's a way that I can try to explain how when we work together, we can get the job done. Urgent is, I hope I didn't give the wrong message here. Urgent is critically important to what we do here in Ulster County. They have a slew of cases. We take a lot of heroin off the street. It's just they're not necessarily in Kingston. When they follow people in New York City, they get them before they come back to New York City. Kingston does the Kingston thing. I do everything.
Jim, had a question? No, sure you have. Any? Ask Chris.
So I got a message sent to me a few weeks ago.
Good luck.
Do you have any type of... Is that something that you can quantify or take an educated guess at?
Sure. I drew up a couple of charts for you. Again, the problem with these charts is they're underreported. A lot of the information goes to an agency that's not law enforcement. So based on the information I have, we had 61 overdoses in Ulster County. This is reports directly to law enforcement. And out of the 61, and this is just heroin, not pills, not any other drug, just heroin. 61 overdoses of heroin, 13 deaths, that's up until October. But then I got some information from JID, the chief of police, and he has 12 overdoses, 9 of which were heroin addictions in 2016. Those numbers didn't reflect on the first chart that I had.
I'm sorry, 12 came from where?
In City of Kingston, he had 12 overdoses, 9 of which were heroin overdoses. So, I mean, you look at these charts, it's crazy. You just look at these charts, and every one of them is spiked right through the roof. But I didn't pass them around because they're really, it's not accurate information.
The point is, it's half
of the information.
Yeah, but 61 or 8, 12, whatever it is, it's not going to do it. It's that simple.
Oh, I agree. I mean, really, and you compare it to some of these other problems we have that we're all focused on, DWIs. We don't lose that many people.
Let's focus on what's at hand right now. Hold on, Chris. Let's focus what's on hand. He's asking for an investigator to come in here to investigate mostly in the city of Kingston, correct?
Yes.
And he's asking for $60,000 to do so.
$90,000.
So,
and the question to you was that would the city of Kingston be willing to participate financially into this cost that we were going to incur if we proceed with this?
Yes.
I mean, I think it's all well known that, you know, what we can do, how we can do it. I think we have great trust in Holly as a leader here. He has demonstrated that before. I mean, we can go around and around talking about many other different things.
But they are related. You're kind of cutting off our questioning.
Tracy, I'm not... I mean, the thing is, the question becomes, are we going to fund this or are we not going to fund it?
My question is,
don't you have confidence in...
Didn't Chris have the floor, though? I don't understand why you...
I understand. The thing is, we're talking about how many numbers of deaths. We went from 61 down to 12. I mean, we can go back and forth. Is this number correct? This number is not correct?
No one's questioning Holly's numbers. I think Holly...
There's no definite number.
Right.
So, I mean, so what are we talking about? It goes from 61 to 12. Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
thanks, Legislative Bartels. I did have just a couple quick more questions for Mr. Connery. So I understand that you're asking us to make an investment in a program in work. So, you know, one year into the program, like this isn't only an investment in a new system of investigations. What you're looking to implement, it's an investment of time, because it's gonna take some to see results. You might not necessarily see results in the first month. You might not see results in the first 6 months. You might not even see it in the first year. But in your opinion, you know, if we put this into policy and provide the funding for this, will this help reduce? By reducing the sellers, will this enable people to save lives and reduce the number of addicts in Kingston and Ulster County?
So my best answer is I think it can. I think that 6 months, if I can't bring you results in 6 months, I haven't done my job. First 2 months ago, but I need a few months, but I think it can. And, you know, I'll throw back at you, Chris. How can we step back and not do it? I mean, this is such a... I don't know that I've ever seen, other than the domestic violence problem that I had 8 years ago, we had a gang problem. I've never seen anything like this. The spike in heroin use in Ulster County, and not just Ulster County, but in Ulster County, I personally, if I go home today and you say no, thank you for your presentation, at least I feel like I've done what I can do. I need to go home tonight and say, I've done everything I know what to do, because this is a problem Our people are dying. That's all. Our people are dying.
And the last question I have for you has to do with the pill epidemic. That's even far more pandemic than the heroin epidemic, because probably for every one person that
disagrees
in heroin, you've got, well, I think a lot of the thing with the pill epidemic, you know, you get people that are, like, say, middle-aged, they have jobs, they have families, they might go through a midlife crisis, and all of a sudden they find out they're...
I would love to talk about this. I think that what you said is true 4 years ago or 3 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, and now we've swung into heroin. I'd be happy to talk more about that. I'm not sure it's...
But this is not with that, too, right?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, yeah. We don't...
Right.
If I have a heroin investigator, and I'm selling methadone, so I'm not interested.
My point is, I'm just trying to say that I think both of the problems are great, and this sounds like a program that can assist with both.
Well,
that's the point I was going to make.
Thank you.
Gracie?
I just have one last follow-up question. Do you keep statistical analysis? Like earlier you said, for drug users, you're trying to get them into...
We have felony records, but we don't have discipline records. You know, we have about 5,000 cases that are charged throughout the county, and I don't have the staff to keep track of misdemeanor charges, and most of the possession seventh charges, not the sales, are misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the cases that end up, even if it's a felony arrest, it's really a misdemeanor charge. Those cases we don't keep stats on. Every felony case I keep track of. But I don't know that I keep track of the different possessions and the sales, to be honest with you. I can just tell you, as your DA, you know, when people come in and they say, you know, we had a car stop and the guy had a small amount of heroin in the car, I said, well, see if he wants to go to drug board, he was a misdemeanor. I'm not interested in that individual. I'm interested in people who bring in drugs and sell them to our kids. That's what I'm interested in.
What would it take to keep those statistics? Because I do think it's
a
valuable.
Body.
Isn't it something we could just put into a computer program?
Sure, if you have somebody that takes the time to get the data. We have created a database for domestic violence, which we didn't have 8 years ago. We don't have such a thing for drugs right now.
And your total caseload, you said it's 5,000?
We have about 5,000 arrests a year. Throughout the county.
I do think that would be important information for us as a county and for legislators.
Chris,
in order
you're 100%
to,
correct.
Yes,
it's very important.
I
think
totally
you have the manpower to do it. That's the question.
How we can facilitate that for your office.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Understanding it's a body or a program or something, but this lack of statistics on all fronts impacts our ability to make informed decisions.
I could not agree with
you more. It impacts everything.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, we have
thank you.
Unlimited amount of money? Or be able
well,
to
I don't help. Think it's unlimited. I think we can address it with a limited amount of money. Something like
that. Last thing I want to add is make sure you don't raise my taxes.
All right, so you're going to get back to me regarding this conversation. All right?
This has been a brief meeting. Thank you for your time. If you have any questions, please call me at any time, and I'll do the best I can to answer your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Next, we have John Parody regarding the resolution here for $20,000 for a housing study. Legislator Parody.
What resolution is it?
It's one of our
amendment.
Behind the Holly
stuff. Number five.
Thank you. 4:30. Everybody's got to pay Mary.
Thank you.
$5. Thank you,
sir. All right, I'm here just advocating for a budget amendment of $20,000 to update a study from 2005. The Ulster County Housing Consortium report that, it's 11 years old now, and it's not being followed because of other situations that have materialized structurally and probably procedurally. The folks really have moved away from the housing consortium to continuing care, the continuum of care. The Government Efficiency and Review Committee has been talking about the housing problem or the housing concerns because the housing consortium is no longer addressing those issues. I did ask my friend, Mr. Legislator Barfiglio, and he signed on to this request. Legislator Green, I believe, signed on to it. Legislator Briggs is away when I tried to get a hold of him, and Legislators Parody and Parody both support. Yes, ma'am.
Can you be more specific about the issues you see at the
moment? Well, the county and the community that are going to do actually a rather good job on senior housing and this low-income housing and special housing, special needs. It's the folks in the middle.
The workforce housing.
The workforce housing, the affordable housing, for those that are getting out of our community college, for those that are getting out of high school, for those that are getting out of college, to be able to come in and have a place to rent or to buy, even though it's probably a little bit prohibitive anymore for somebody 21, 22 years old to be able to buy a house. We don't know what even to offer because things have changed so dramatically since 2005 with the collapse of the economy and the rebound, the Airbnb implications when it comes to the availability of housing. So we put this amount in because we feel it's about appropriate. The one study that I looked at was for the railroad report was $30,000, and I don't think this is quite that complicated, and I don't think, and I think there's a lot of material that may be readily available.
Hector first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To sort of tag on to Legislator Berkey, you know, the $20,000 actually is very small and discreet, and while I always praise, you know, frugality, that may not be enough. One of the things to also just highlight, you know, the Ulster County Planning Board, and actually this is something that Jennifer, you actually got with the Housing Strategies Report, and it's one of those things that the county already has some. It's dated though. The problem is that document is. I apologize. But you know, it's one of these things. It's one of these things where we may want to actually have the planning department do this, and we may need to put more than $20,000 to actually go and accomplish this. Just realize that.
That's something. I had planned on proposing a different study. prior to putting it in, I reached out to Dennis Doyle, and we had a long talk about it, and Dennis said, actually, we could potentially do that study with federal dollars. And so my question for you, John, is have you reached out to the planning department probably the planning department, are any other dollars available for this, or if they had thought...
Not in that regard, but I did reach out to them, and that's how I found out that the Housing Consortium was really no longer doing anything.
Right. And they're
focusing
anything,
on continuum of care. Now, we could put it off for another year and put it off for another year, but we got to start somewhere.
We have discussions with...
Go on. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. No, I'm recognizing the talk.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just
going
to say, you know, since that time, this is not to negate what you're proposing, RUMCO has taken on more work evaluating housing needs. And I was wondering if you...
You know, listen, I missed what you said at the very beginning.
I'm sorry.
So since that time, RUMCO has taken on more and added staff in the area of... first of all, they've gone steadily with NeighborWorks, and I'm wondering if you have had conversations with coordination of this work between them and the planning.
Well, yes, but we do need some research to be able to offer something. Say, here's the identify the real problems. RUPCO is doing a good job. They even wanted to have safe housing, and you know, they may not be able to do it. They got beat up for it. We have to get the information to whether it's the builders, the developers, whomever it may be.
I agree. I'm just wondering, how did you arrive at the proposal for $20,000?
We had a meeting with RUPCO. I did not speak to the planning other than Dennis a couple of times when I became aware that the housing consortium was really no longer in existence.
Right.
And yet it's a legitimate resolution that was passed. We got to decide, do you want to keep it, move forward, investigate it, or bag it?
John, two things.
Now, the $20,000, that was, our only rationale was, I mean, if the railroad study was 30, this didn't seem to be quite as
this is bigger, I guarantee
complicated, but there may be more information available.
There's more data to collect.
Yes, sir.
Just two things. RUPCO does have a program, Berkey, that I just got an email yesterday regarding first-time home buying.
They have $650,000 grant that they are asking people to come forth and implement this first-time home buying. So they are doing that. Second point, John, I'm a developer on my other hat. One of the things that you mentioned about family housing and various other type of housing, you go before these municipalities, they don't want people to flood the school districts. They will put up, walls up regarding your development based on, what you're proposing, how you're proposing. Senior housing is nice, it's very comfortable, it fits in the community. But when you go into the various other type of housing, such as workforce housing, they raise up their arms and start saying, what about this, what about this? So it does raise other concerns, and it's not the county's concern, it's the municipal concern that you're building it. So that is a big issue, believe me.
Yeah, I do represent a part of the county that is municipalities, as you do. And I also remember our conversation about needing municipal services to be able to do a lot of this.
Yep.
I'm not necessarily talking about huge tract developments. I don't know yet. If we don't study, we're never going to really know what it is.
No, I'm just bringing that up.
Yes, sir. No, you're absolutely right.
But, RUPCO did have two days ago, they had a first-time home buyer.
I saw that. And I've been talking to them. Okay. And they're struggling to overcome the torturous situation they had up in Woodstock when they came in to develop something and got their brains beat in for 8 years.
They're the only company that could do that whole lot for 8 years and still do it.
Yes.
So God
yes.
bless them. Any other questions?
Yes.
Chris?
The thing that a lot of, like what Legislator Tarantino just brought up, is that a lot of, development is kind of a home rule type issue with that local, town and municipal planning body like this. We go out to RFP with a company that's going to, for research on behalf of the legislature, that's what you're looking to do with this. What would you look to see come out of the research information?
Well, just that. They would have to be concerned with the home rule concerns of some communities, and some communities have said they really don't want housing. Depends on what kind they don't want. But, we also should have grown enough to know that in some communities have been taken to court by the federal government when they look to zone out lower income housing or middle income housing.
They're not zoning it out. They are making it more difficult.
Well, they're zoning it out in some...
But there again, they're asking you for much more prudent things in your development, so to speak.
So you're looking for like a database informational synopsis.
That's correct.
That would be.
If you believe that there's a shortage of affordable housing, we have to have the data up to date to be able then to go out and promote it to whomever might be available to build. Developers, the non-for-profits, the for-profits. We have to get that somewhere. And the study that they based their work on was done in 2005.
Gracie?
I'm definitely open to this suggestion. I would like to bring in Dennis Doyle and the planning department to do the conversation. I'd also like to know if there's money other than Kaufman. Dennis is leveraging additional money. Maybe it could be money through RUPCO. In the short term, in the next week or so, we could mention, maybe we could get a better handle on one, what a study would cost, an update with facilitating of such a study, potentially through the planning department. That's the place.
And I might also add this problem has been around a while, and this is the first time it's being addressed. The planning department knows about it, others know about it, and we're bringing something forward, and it's sort of a lot that happens. Somebody else has a better idea, maybe. We don't know that yet, but this is not brand new.
Right, I know that. Adding on to what Mr. Martell says, and also what that report did recommend, that we said going in the other direction to communities is a matter about this. We might want to adopt some of the policies that were actually recommended in the original report. Which
recommend them countywide, but it's the local home rule that has authority over that.
That is true, but there is a constitutional issue here.
James? Jim?
I just wanted to ask you, if I may, you went around town to town and found out where the housing with John's talking about.
It did address housing, and it was dropped.
Problem, and I'm not saying it's municipality, government subsidized through housing tax credits. Which
no, that's not true.
Hi, Doris.
You didn't get a subpoena.
No, I didn't. Jim, we have to identify what the problem is first. For the kids that are getting out of school, we're not doing that well. I mean, the study...
But, John, you need to have the development. Yes, I've sat in on the seminar. It was a big development. Yeah, you allocate 6 or 8 units for a...
If the municipality, Jim, if the municipality has it in their zoning law.
Who's doing the development now? The market isn't requiring it.
I would disagree that I think it is, but we don't know what it is. We don't know.
Okay. All right, well...
John, can we have Dennis intercede here, see if there is, like you mentioned, federal monies, various other things that maybe we could do? I'm not saying we can or not, but you want to contact me directly?
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
And just let Don know then, all right?
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much.
That's it. Okay.
Carl. Carl has... Amendment regarding the...
I know, we got to get rid of that.
Yeah, that chair. I think it was my chair. I don't know how you got it.
I've got
monster.com. All right, you got a...
Cyberbullying.
Yep, okay, so the first one is... 21,200 regarding. Is that the monster?
No. I want to take the monster first.
What number is that?
Number 11.
Amendment number 11.
Okay, so I put forth this amendment because of recent events that the legislature has gone through with the cyberbullying law or the anti-cyberbullying law. And I was made aware of this program, which is called DontBeAMonster.com. It's actually a national program. And one of my town's businesses, Headless Horseman Hayride, is actually a member of this DontBeAMonster.com. And what they do is they go into school and they give seminars on how bullying affects people, how cyberbullying affects people, and how to prevent kids from becoming cyberbullies. Now, I wasn't aware of it, but this program is going on right now in Ulster County, but it's all volunteer. I guess last month, when the cyberbullying law went back to committee, I was the only one that voted against it because I felt like the crime... punishment fit the crime. And I got contacted by Mike Juby, who owns the Headless Horseman, and he explained to me some of the reasons why he felt that stiff penalties for cyberbullying he was in agreement with. And one of the things is, and I don't want to go through the whole law, but we don't want to incarcerate our youth from cyberbullying or bullying. We don't want to give them Class A misdemeanors. But I think that a program like this is going to prevent these kids from becoming felons. So I'd like to just take this opportunity to bring Mike up here because he can explain this program much better than I can. But I just want to say that as of this year, he's all funded by himself. And all of the time that he puts into this program, it's his own time and his volunteers' time. And I think he really needs help, and I think it's a great time to do this because if we have a law that's going to put punishments on cyberbullying, it would be a good idea if the kids knew what they were getting into before they actually did it. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Hi, how are you?
I'd like to say hello to everybody, and for those of you that don't know, I'm going to give you a little background. I'm a retired detective in the city of Kingston for 25 years. I also own a couple of businesses in the city of Kingston, and I own Headless Horseman Hayrides and Haunted Houses in Olson Park, New York. Next year will be our 25th year. I know I don't look that old, right? But Don't Be a Monster is part of a nonprofit organization called Imagine Better. And I belong to an organization called America Haunts that has about 30 of the largest and the best haunted attractions in the country from the East Coast to the West Coast. One of our members has an autistic son, and he spoke to my wife and I about his concern about his autistic son being bullied in school.
and trying to stop that from happening, not only to his son, but to all the kids in school that it happened to. I was probably the bully when I was in school. So we came up with this Don't Be a Monster program, and there's probably 20 of us from the East Coast to the West Coast that are on board, and more of our haunted attraction people are coming on board every year. October is anti-bullying month, so it kind of fits with what we're doing. When we go into the schools, we go with our headless horseman attire, and the kids look at us as though we're like the cool guys. We're not educators. We're not telling them the same thing every day, do this, don't do that, you have to do your homework. They want to come to our assembly. When they come, we are pretty pointed at how bad the cyberbullying is. I don't have to tell you, it's 24/7. When I went to school, you get off the bus, you didn't see that guy or that girl until the next day. But they're not done with this until they go to bed at night and shut those computers off. So we, just to get in the program, it's a very professionally done program. I didn't bring anything with me because Carl told me I only had a short time to talk, but I'd love to come and do a presentation for you if you'd like. Just to get into the program, it costs $10,000. We have a character that is called Frank Shelley, and Frank Shelley resembles Frankenstein because Frank Shelley invented Frankenstein. And there's a video that we play, and we're pretty pointed at our presentation. We sometimes do 900 kids a day, three assemblies. I did an assembly in Westchester County. I did three of them in one day. After the third assembly, a teacher brought a young girl down and asked me if she could speak. I said, certainly. I gave her the microphone. She immediately started crying. She composed herself, and first words out of her mouth were, "Please don't be a monster." So I was pretty happy. I said, she got that out of the program. She got the name. And then she says, "I've been bullied all through school, and last year I was going to kill myself. I spoke to my father about it. My father and my family stopped me from committing suicide." And then she said, "Please don't be a monster. Be nice to people." 250 kids got up and gave this young lady a standing ovation. The teachers, principal, they were all teary-eyed. Teacher that brought this young lady down to me said, "I have to tell you how powerful this presentation is. This young girl has been in our middle school for 3 years and hasn't said one word to anyone in 3 years. She walks down the hall with her head down into the classroom. If the teacher approaches her and says, "Is everything okay?" she'll either shake her head yes or shake her head no. It's the first time they heard her speak in 3 years. That, to me, made the whole thing worthwhile. I have other stories. We had a big kid in the back kick a chair and stand up. My God, he was huge. We were like, oh, boy. He stormed out. We had a teacher come in about 20 minutes later and stood there and listened to our presentation. He came down, and the guy says to us, he says, "I'm a guidance counselor here, and this fellow just came into my office. I never had anything like this happen before in my life." He said that he is one of these bulliers, and he doesn't want to be. And he went into the guidance counselor's office to tell him. The children today, the younger children, they don't understand how difficult this is on other people. And as far as strict laws and all that type of thing, there's a young girl that her family came from Ireland. She came over to this country for a better life. She was bullied by a team of a self-proclaimed group of girls called the Mean Girls. For talking to a football player, they hit her in the back of the head with a Monster Energy can of energy. Just talking to these kids. She was going to go to the prom. The day of the prom, her 12-year-old sister came in and found her hanging from the staircase with a scarf that her parents had given her Christmas before. Three kids that were involved were arrested. Quiet as this room is, that's how quiet the assemblies get. Make that point. The kids today, and when I was a kid, and when everybody here was younger, you don't realize the repercussions of doing something. Okay? So these laws, again, I was a cop for 25 years. I did the whole deal, man. I got shot at, I got stabbed, I delivered a baby. I did the whole thing. I was an undercover cop. I was listening to Holly. They have to understand his consequences. And this program brings that to them. We give T-shirts away. Naturally, we ask a question. Nobody answers the question. One or two hands go up. Once we give the T-shirt away, the next question, every kid's hands up, you know. I bring a magician into the schools, and he'll do an illusion. And the point being of that is that I want the kids 2 weeks from now to say, hey, remember when that guy floated that table? That was cool. Oh, yeah, that was in that Don't Be a Monster presentation that we attended. These kids want to come to this assembly. There are repercussions. I'm not saying put everybody in jail. We can't do that. I'm not saying give them a record. That's not what we're about. But if you don't say, hey, this is what could happen to you, it's open. It's Dodge City. It's Dodge City. Simple analogy. I was in the Army. When I went in the Army, I was scared to death. Okay, I got put in there. I'm like, oh, my God. I went through it. If they called me today, of course they wouldn't, but if they did, it'd be easy for me to go back in the Army. I would venture to guess that there's nobody in this room that's been arrested. If we had somebody in this room that had been arrested, it's easy for them to get arrested again. They don't care. I had a guy that spent, a very good friend of mine, spent 10 years in prison, Attica prison. And I said to him one day, Patrick, I said, you know, you're on parole, man. You may not want to do that. He said, let me tell you something, Michael. They sent me back. It ain't a bad place to be. They give you 3 meals a day. The guy will close the door for you. Forget to close it. So he didn't care if he went back, right? The object is let these kids know that there's penalties, there's consequences, and that helps deter the problem. I don't know what else I can tell you. I feel real strongly for this. Right now, my wife and I probably have $40,000 invested. I have to pay salaries. I have to get it.
Mike, what would be...
Dave, please, Dave.
I'll
let him finish, and then we'll have... What? Well, we're still talking while I'm finished. Go on, Mike.
I forgot to tell you.
40,000.
I forget that. Yeah, right now we have about 40,000 invested. We have to, we have to pay for our people to go. I have to pay my magician. Each wristband that we give out at the end of the presentation, 65 cents. If I do 900 people, that's 800. So there's expenses. The schools want us, we go. I just think it's a worthwhile program. In New Paltz, there's a principal down there, Dr. Richard Rosenthal, I think his last name is. This is what I think was comical. He called me up on the phone. I was giving a presentation somewhere. And he said, look, he says, I answered my phone, I was on a break. He says, I just got this thing brought before my desk. He says, this Don't Be a Monster thing. He says, I've got to talk to somebody about it. I don't know if anybody here knows this guy, but he's a character. So I said, well, I can try to help you with that. He says, who thought of this thing? This thing is ridiculous. So I looked at my phone. If I could have went through the phone, I'd have choked that guy. Right? And then he said, brilliant. This is brilliant. Of course, I said, I thought of it. But I didn't. But he has told me over and over again that daily he gets anti-bullying programs that come across his desk, and in his words, they're crap. He has been booking us every October. He tries to get us on Halloween to come to his school. I don't know if anybody knows him, but he's a good reference. Dave, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I got to go through him.
You got to go through him. Okay, boss. Yeah. All right. Well, first, anybody on the committee has questions first, Dave?
I
think we
go first.
No, on the committee first, please.
I have a question for Carl, too. But so you mentioned you do Westchester County, too. Are you all over the Hudson Valley region in terms of this?
Well, at this point, yeah, I'll go anywhere. If you can find the room to give us the money that Carl has been so nice to try to get for us, I'll make sure that's just used in Ulster County when we purchase the stuff just to be used in Ulster County.
And how many programs?
Well, I tell you, I can get you that exact number, but I bet you we were in four schools a week and sometimes two and three assemblies in each school.
Carl, should we wait for your questions?
No, go on. Finish up.
So I think the program sounds amazing. And
if you go to don'tbeamonster.org, I know you guys.
In researching, I looked it up, and it sounds like a great program. And what concerns me is at budget time. I think the more appropriate way to approach this, if we're going to do it, fund a line for bullying prevention, and then actually see what's out there and evaluate different campaigns, and additionally look within our own county and our own departments and talk to our own, they could leverage these funds to work on both get more money but also to work on anti, that's the way I feel like is the proper approach if we're going to, or a comment to you, that's what I'm saying, it's more a comment to you because it's your amendment.
Chris?
What age group do you target and how many school districts have you?
We're like from the 4th, 5th grade to 7th grade, 7th grade. And how many, we've been in Ulster County, we've been in the Kingston School District. I'm probably not going to know what the hell county I'm in. Rondout, we've been in New Paltz, Saugerties. I really have to know. Took a little while to get it going. And right now we're doing it for free, but I have to tell you, you guys know free isn't free. It's costing us a lot of dough, and if it may be something that's just going to go away on my end if we can't get some help somewhere.
Carl?
Yeah, I think to answer Legislator Bartels' question, one of the things that's unique about this program is that the principle behind it in Ulster County is one of the biggest attractions in the state, if not in the country. Kids don't respond to authority figures as much as they respond to, and I'm just going to say, like, the celebrity part of this program. Certainly, the county could set a policy to say that there will be a cyberbullying program, and we will go out to do that, but that's such a bureaucracy right now.
This is all bullying, though, right? Not just cyberbullying?
I think it's focused on cyberbullying,
but you're going to address the bullying problem.
Right.
And if I can just interrupt Carl for one second, he's 100% correct, as I said earlier. When we go into these schools, we walk past the kids, they're at their lockers, they stop and they look at us and we're the cool guys. We own a haunted house. Unfortunately, our haunted house is successful, and we always ask how many people have been to Heather Swartzman Hayrides, and it's great they raise their hands and they really listen because we're not educators, we're not there every day, we're the cool guys that come in, we're dressed in black, and they're really listening. This is not, I got to go to this assembly like we all used to do just because we had to go. They're still doing it, right? They got to go, and you need six teachers in there to keep them quiet. These kids, they go in, and they're listening, so we have their attention.
And I just think that we don't need, at this point, to reinvent the wheel. Putting the bureaucracy of creating a policy, creating, a budget line for this thing, and getting whatever department of the county.
Line.
I understand that, but this is streamlining the effect, and you can get a lot of bang out of your buck for $10,000 from this organization.
but it's also a process and an educational process for us, the legislature, because we don't know what else is out there. That's the point. That's what an RFP process does.
Mike, just so you're aware, we usually have a contract agency that we have throughout our budget. You would come there if we decided that would be an agency that you would go under. We have a whole procedure that we have in the past that if your agency wanted to request funds from the county, you would put an application in, you would state different reasons why, blah, blah, blah. And we as the legislative body would say, contractual agency, yes or no, we would fund you or not fund you. That's how we've done with a lot of different agencies throughout Ulster County. You're coming in today asking for, you know, a specific amount for a purpose that you provide the service. No one's debating, you know, what you do a great job, I'm sure. It seems like it's getting bigger and bigger. But there again, you know, it's up to the legislative body to do whatever they want to do regarding this funding. You know, everybody should pat you on the back for what you have done so far, and it sounds like you do a great job and that you're expanding and getting bigger. But there again, you know, just so that you know how the process is, I mean, you probably should have came in a couple months ago, filled out the application, and been a lot easier and quicker if you did that, much more conducive to how we fund agencies. Dave?
He has received county money, by the way.
I think one of the points here that, and I think Carl made it quite well, is that the problem is now. Not only that, we are considering a cyberbullying law now, one that actually creates, in other words, in some ways, one of my concerns with this cyberbullying law is it's going to create new victims because now all of a sudden you have somebody with a Class A misdemeanor. So the mindset of education, as Popeye would say, is a pretty important thing here. If we're going to be going into this cyberbullying aspect, you know, this law, then we should have an educational component. And you're providing that educational component at this point, and I think we could help them out for this year. And then the following year, you could certainly do it the same way that we were talking about as we put we do not want to see this thing end anyway. Now, let me ask you a couple of questions, Mike. Now, you're basically in middle schools and high schools. That's typically where you go?
Yes.
And then you haven't charged the school districts anything then? Yeah, because they usually have some kind of budgeting process. But, I mean, I think we should have skin in the game as the county because we're the ones that are putting forth a new cyberbullying law, and we should have the skin in the game.
The county executive did come up with $3,000 or $4,000 for us.
Okay, well, that's good.
For this past season.
That's good, but I mean, I think, you know, we have, you know, there's plenty of programs, as he was pointing out, and what we do is we fund contract agencies, and typically we're a deliberative body. We have to discuss it. We have to go back and forth about it. You know, we just don't say, okay, that's where let's say Martel's talking about the idea that, you know, we're a deliberative body. We have to do that, and that's the good part and the bad part, both, I mean, however you want to look at it. But, I mean, I really think you should start getting some money out of this. I know they pay for some people.
Please.
I've been to a number of assemblies of my. I retired a couple years ago from teaching, but I know there are assemblies and some of the programs that were brought in pay these people quite well, and I didn't think they were that effective. You know, and I think you will start say, with the Angler Sourcing is a really significant thing. You know, I haven't seen yours, but I know you personally. I've known you a long time, and I know very well that what you do very well.
Thank you.
So, I mean, I really would look back. Next time you do one, I would like to go see it.
Of course. It won't be until next season.
All right.
Ken is having a hemorrhage over there.
Yes.
But before you go any further, I'm told that the county exec's funding this already.
Let me give you some background, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I want to thank Carl for his advocacy on cyberbullying.
Well, I'm curious, how could the county exec fund this thing?
First of all, the Department of Mental Health works. Collaborates with
did
schools
I screw up?
On a daily basis.
No, you didn't.
We provide education to the school. We have a pretty robust cyberbullying initiative that we do with the school district. There are several groups. So in August, we initiated a contract.
For what, $50,000?
No,
4,000. Oh, I'm sorry.
What? Can I ask what schools?
The Kingston Roundout. The school availability is tough with their educational standards. You know, families, we collaborate with the school superintendent's organization. And, you know, like say, you don't go every year. The same program to the school every year. Our intention is we got four.
So why are we even talking about this? It's already funded. I mean, there again, where in your budget? I didn't see anywhere in your budget that you're funding something like this.
It's in the mental health education.
Yeah, but it's not specifically stated in there, is it?
It's hidden on their contract.
And we have a pool of dollars, as Tracy was pointing out.
Tracy, you had to point out that you had the pool of dollars for that purpose. You didn't know that. Do you know that beforehand? That they were funding this?
I had forgotten. I heard it yesterday.
Oh, yesterday.
But not before yesterday.
Oh, okay. But you approved it last year.
How much does it cost you to do that assembly when you do it?
It depends on the number of people. I mean, we've done as little as 25 kids and as many as 1,000. That'd be a tough for me to answer just off the top of my head, but it also depends on where it is. I mean, if we're at the southern end of the county, I have to pay my people to get there. I have to pay them an hourly rate, you know, to do the, and if we do one assembly, we're out 40 minutes later, we're out, you know, or an hour later, and then the travel back, if it's 45 minutes or an hour and a half, it varies, and as I said, the wristbands alone are 65 cents, so if I do it.
So, Ken, how are you funding that? I mean, on a per individual basis, or are you giving it so much for
the... We negotiate a rate of $1,000 per month. And perfectly, we work closely with the schools, and we try to, you know, provide counseling
and says Ulster County Legislator and the county exec on the handouts and everything.
For $10,000, we can get that.
But no, again,
this is
part
of
the work that we do.
Harry, any other questions, Murky?
Yeah, when we were in committee.
Not sure when they either, so.
Right. No, I'm just saying, anywhere this information. You know,
in this legislative chambers too.
Sorry?
In this legislative chambers too.
Yeah. Although that's not what I was referring to when I was talking about bullying and a culture of bullying. I think it's great, but a lot of it is more of an integral program that gets into the school cafeteria workers and playground monitors on a more ongoing basis. I know it's very difficult for us to fund that kind of thing, but I'd like to see that.
Mike, no one's questioning what you do. You do a great job of what you're doing. All right, and continue to do it. We're just a little surprised, at least I'm a little surprised here that we're already funding you to a certain point. Here we're talking for the last, I don't know, 40 minutes about funding, and basically you're being funded. So, I mean, it's probably a shame on us, basically, that we didn't know all this stuff.
Maybe it's my fault.
No, that's all right. Dave?
I still think that I applaud the, I actually applaud the county executive.
No one's questioning that.
I mean, it would have been nice if we knew it, but that's okay. But I still think we need to have, $4,000.
11 within the county, and there's two that are outside.
And this isn't the only program.
Okay, but I mean, there's 11 school districts that are within the county. So, in other words, I really think basically do it. Other school districts decide something. I mean, that might be a way of dealing with this.
There's a contract that said they have. So, correct? And on that, it's so much every concert or every performance or every...
There are other groups that we contact with to provide similar programs. Again, you don't bring the same program back to the same school every year. We have a program and operate the school.
Ken, can you give us a list of the other programs that you offer? How many, how much money, and so forth?
And a programmatic summary as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be helpful, even as we're discussing the cyberbullying law. That was to Jennifer's point, that it would be helpful as we're talking about prevention to know that we're actually engaged in funding prevention already.
Mm-hmm.
It would be worthwhile.
That should be in the resolution.
Well,
I mean,
go on.
Yeah, I mean, you can't expect the executive branch of government to take everything they're doing that's under $50,000.
I don't think we're asking for everything. We've had a very heated discussion about the cyberbullying law.
I understand that, but the way this came about, I didn't know this either, okay? But it came about from a newspaper article last month on the cyberbullying law. And since Mr. Juby is running this program, he called me directly, and he wanted to discuss it. And he told me about his program, and he said that he's doing it all volunteer, you know, and can you help me? And I said, you're darn sure I can help you. Then he told me that he did get some money from the county executive. I wasn't concerned about that. I actually was encouraged by the fact that, you know, his organization went under contract. But it's a contract under $50,000. There are millions of those things that we don't see, ever.
Carl, the point is, though, that we approved this budget last year. Part of that approval was this money that was in there. Now, they're using it for this particular service. I think we should know.
Well, how many other services?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking how many other services they provide regarding that. You know.
No, you're darn right.
Tracy.
Yeah, all right, let's lower the threshold.
I don't want to lower the threshold, although we can have that debate. I don't think that we are we're saying that we need to know everything that's approved under X amount of dollars. We are highlighting the fact that we've been having a very specific discussion about cyberbullying related to a proposed law, and our very specific discussions, particularly in the Democratic caucus, holdup has been about lack of prevention and rehabilitation, and that would have been a perfect time to have had the discussion that, hey, we actually are already doing something in the county, and this is what we're doing. As far as this proposal before us, I still very strongly, it sounds like a wonderful program, but I still very strongly feel if we want to, the legislature, put additional money into bullying prevention, which is a laudable, it's worthwhile. It's absolutely, I think we should have that discussion, but I'm not prepared to give it to any one specific organization without a process and a thoughtful discussion. This, to your point, this program happens September through November, according to the documentation. We're already funding $4,000. We can have an RFP process, and we might say through the RFP process exactly what you said. We want to fund this organization another $6,000, $7,000 to do every program, even though we've already done four, and you probably go into the high school. I have no idea, but absent a conversation, just there's one thing before us. We've just heard from Ken Cornell that we're funding other organizations. I don't know what they are. I don't know how they compare. I want to have the conversation with the department. If we're going to do it, I want to have an RFP process. I want to have a thoughtful conversation about it. What?
Well, I believe we are.
Well, we're talking through Ken now, so Ken's going to get us all the information. Correct, Ken?
I could try a lot of it right now, but
we're
just
belaboring. What are you doing? Belaboring? No, you're not. No. We're going to move along. Sorry. All right, Michael, thank you very much. We'll be back to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I put you in the jackpot.
No.
Thank you very much. He put himself.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
All right, next, Carl, you have the next one?
Yes.
We've got to move this along a little bit. It's been too long. This is resolution number 11.
But yes.
Amendment 11.
As most of you know, on the Ways and Means Committee, I'm committed to our children, you know, like cyberbullying, alcohol awareness, like eating disorders. The Christmas wishes of Ulster County supplies families and children with hope. There are many families in Ulster County, especially during the holiday season, that can't afford basic things like a meal, a holiday meal, toys for their children, birthday parties, and Christmas wishes of Ulster County, which is the 501c3, offers that. Again, this is an agency that runs right now totally on volunteer and donations. What I'm asking is for, and you have a budget in front of you. I know it's a robust budget, but you'd be surprised to know that for as little as $30 per child last year, a kid had a nice Christmas. The problem is that there were 500 kids that needed this service. That was in 2014. In 2014, with a staff of 10, Christmas Wishes of Ulster County served 70 families. In 2015, 197 families. The problem is 250 families applied. I do want to introduce you to the, I want to call you the executive director, Melissa Lynn Banks. She has been working, and actually, here's how she gets her referrals. She doesn't go out and scour the county looking for kids in need. She gets referrals actually from DSS, from RCAL, the Institute for Family Health, Family of Woodstock, various school nurses and social workers within the Kingston City School District. So I can't really answer a lot of the questions that you might have about this program, so I'm going to ask Melissa to come up and...
Carl, before you go any further,
yes.
Why wasn't this done through the contract agency process?
Why wasn't that done through the contract agency process?
Yes.
Well, because at this time of year is when Melissa is most active, and I only found out about the program last month. Okay. I found out through,
please.
I found out actually through social media. She had been, someone had written an article about her service, and since she is one of my friends, because you used to live in the town of Esopus.
I did.
What was that?
I did, and then I moved in.
Right, right. So she was one of my friends, and I saw all the remarks on her program, and I saw her at an event, a social event, introduced myself to her, and I asked her about her service. That's where this all came about. And I thought that...
But you still didn't answer my question. Why didn't you go through the contract agency process? I mean, we have a process that we fund outside agencies, and I'm sure it's a very worthwhile agency, but, I mean, I could probably bring in three from my hometown.
Well, Mr. Chairman, tell me that process. Do I go to the Office of Contract Management and say, here, I want a contract?
No, you go to Don. Don sends out the contract or to the different group, agency groups that we are funding. If you have a request, he's the thing you have to fill out. And send them back to him.
Well, we're not funding anything like this. This is the first, I believe.
Well, we're going to be funding.
I'll just explain a little who's on first. I think that what Richard's talking about is the, you know, around August, I want to say, we send out a letter to all the agencies that we've previously funded asking them if they'd like to be funded again.
Mm-hmm. Right, but they haven't funded.
Well, they're new agencies. They would have to fill out the paperwork that comes back to us. And then we evaluate from that what they have done.
Well, with all due respect, I told you it was last month that I found out about her program. Now, you sent out that letter to all our contract agencies over 3 months ago.
And every legislator knows about the contract agency program that we've been doing for the past years.
But could I ask her to go through the contract process when we don't even know who she is, okay? 3 months ago, I didn't really know that she had a program like this. I don't see... How this is relevant. I just don't.
What,
I can see someone
come in here and you can fund anything in the last minute. I mean, that's why we go through a process that we've been going through from year to year. It's been August, we send out letters.
Well, I don't think it was the last minute. I think that you asked for budget amendments. I gave my budget amendment in a timely manner, and it was submitted to the legislature. It's got nothing to say in the budget amendments.
Dave.
I mean, I had a. I'm somebody that, you know, typically supports people. And I read cyberbullying because of the other law coming out, and I think that it's important to say, you know, you agree there is a process you could use. And not only that, that you can use very easily. I mean, it may come to the committee that I'm the deputy chair of, and Chairman Moore take anything away from this agency in any way. But I know there's other places that do this. Community Action does it. I know my wife's a volunteer there, and she actually goes out with Sue Inchy, who runs the program, and goes to Walmart and actually does the shopping. She spends 2 days there shopping for kids.
Yes.
I'm on community. I'm a board member on community action. I know exactly what they do.
So what I'm saying is, that could be enhanced. We give them a certain amount of money now. In other words, it's a program that we know is going on, and is can be competitive. And that we know that they're already doing that. I believe not only they do that, but I believe. What's the other one that...
Like, there's a few, but we work with all of them to make sure that the families aren't buying it every big account.
Right.
So we
work with the same thing. They do that with... What's the other program the People's Place, I believe. They have another one that does something similar, and they kind of work together so they're not... creating duplicates.
She coordinates
so
with
that. I understand that, but what I'm saying is the process, as the chairman pointed out, is an important one. And I went against the process technically for cyberbullying because of the present law, and we've been discussing this thing my take on it is we're going to put a law in, we should have the education component.
That's funny, though, because I was the only one that fought to keep that law on the legislature, and I was the only one to ask for funding for the cyberbullying program. So I find it disingenuous to tell you that you're behind it 100%.
Time out. We're talking about this now. Tracy, go on, Tracy. Dave. Dave.
So you know
Tracy has the floor.
You're being...
Dave, Tracy has the floor.
I just find it...
I agree with you, Chairman, just in terms of the process.
Dave, please, thank you.
I also see Carl's point in that it is... I mean, technically, when you say every one of us could bring two or three of these, and in fact, that would be a flashback to 2004 when our legislative programs and contract agencies were 20, all these different little things, and it was almost like line items for individual legislators. I do think we need to go through a process. I want to raise another concern, even though I totally support the concept of this proposal. I just want to raise the concern about separation. It's a Christmas program. It's Easter. I mean, it's not Hanukkah. It's not Kwanzaa. It's not all these others. And I know that seems petty, but it's something I hold myself to a fairly high standard in terms of religious endeavor. And I know we like to think of everything as being kind of equal, but in fact, it's not equal. I was raised in a Christian family. It sounds to me like, oh, Christmas time is just a holiday time. But I try to imagine what someone who doesn't celebrate Christmas would feel about that concept about, oh, Christmas is just a holiday time, because it's not quite. So that's my other concern with this, which I shared with Legislator Portfolio separately.
I don't think that necessarily her program is surrounded by just Christmas or Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is not a religious.
Okay. But I mean, if you don't celebrate Christmas, you're not missing.
Our statement is spreading Christmas cheer throughout the year. So our big thing is that
we're
different
chair
from other agencies.
That's my chair.
Because we do things throughout the year. We don't just do Christmas. So we do Christmas. We do Halloween dance. We do backpacks. We do an egg hunt. We do a Valentine's dance. We do each month. We take one of the kids, on our list, and we provide a birthday party for them. So although the name is Christmas, which is Ulster County, our tagline is spreading Christmas cheer throughout the year, because we do pride ourselves on helping families the entire year. We aren't obviously Christmas for most families, but we do things the entire year long. And I know because the word Christmas, it seems like a religious affiliation. Like I said, we're doing this every single month, so people know that it's not just a Christmas thing.
Listed in the packet and on the budget.
Oh, I see that.
Okay. But, I mean, I'm sorry if Christmas... You know, if a kid doesn't celebrate Christmas or a family doesn't celebrate Christmas, then they probably wouldn't reach out.
That's my point.
For help.
That's my point.
Well, but for a Thanksgiving dinner, they're going to get help. I mean, they could reach out anyway if they're in need and they feel like they don't celebrate Christmas, but they'd like their kid to have a toy this year or something. I mean, that's not, she doesn't discriminate as to who she helps. And there is a network of volunteers in the county that help her identify who these people are. And these aren't people, these aren't, you know, rogue volunteer organizations. Barcal, for instance, her family of Woodstock, Kingston School District, the nurses, the social workers, People's Place, you know, they all know that there are people who need help out there that obviously if they could help them, they wouldn't give her the referral. So it's got, I don't think it has anything to do with, Community Action does this and they do this with that. Community Action is a bare bones organization that gets most of their money from the federal government. And I'm a board member and we are stressed. Our budget is exactly to the penny. Every year we have no money.
Why don't you tell them to put more money in the Community Action? You're a member of the board. Why don't you do that?
Well, we did last year. We put $5,000 more in to Community Action. And we didn't go through a legislative contract process to do it.
But the process is just the contract agency asked for more. Yes, it did. I think Dave even recommended, if I'm not mistaken.
I was on, and then it came out.
Right?
So
yeah. I think he recommended it.
That's an ongoing contract. We don't have a contract.
No, it's not ongoing. It's year to year.
It's year to year, right.
And the thing is, you had to be aware of it because you did this with awareness that you went through the process like that. All right, so I mean, don't say that you're not aware that we had this in place.
Well, no, but the first year that I got money for awareness, I didn't go through the legislative contractual process.
I know you didn't, though. That was the whole situation that you didn't go through that process. But there is a process. I mean, Dave makes a recommendation to the Ways and Means Committee which ones they fund and how much.
Right. Well, anyway, I'm asking you guys to think about it. I know it's a hefty budget. I asked Melissa, you know, what would her wish list be? And this would be like a bare minimum of what she did last year, but she'd be appreciative of anything you could do, and for the kids of Ulster County. But I thank you for your time. I don't mean to ruffle anybody's feathers. I just brought a budget amendment in to the Ways and Means Committee.
Do you guys have a line for that?
I would like a little more respect, though.
A little more professionalism. I mean, for the first
that's
25
all.
Minutes it's of the
about,
other
side. It's about how you did it.
All right,
Dave, resolution number, or amendment number 6.
Starting to get a little
number 6 is reduce the funding of executive office.
You know what?
What are you talking about?
Amendment number 6. Everybody
Thank
has a copy,
you.
Dave.
Sorry, I'm a little punch. No, this is extra.
He's got
his own handout.
I'll have one, Dave.
Stand here, please. Thank you. For the minutes.
Here you go.
Let's go. Dave has the floor. Let's go, Dave. We're behind schedule.
Hey, it wasn't my fault.
I know. I didn't say it was.
Alrighty. Anyway, I put in the budget for a.
Please,
deduction.
Everyone.
Thank you. All right, to put together I have a little sheet that sort of a work in progress, running through the websites, the various budgets, along with emails. And if you take a look at it, this lines them up, the county executive's budgets as compared to all the others. The other 17 county executives. This said it's a work in progress. Ulster budget ranks 14 of 18 in terms of total budget size, meaning there's four counties with smaller total budgets. The executive ranks 10 of 18 and so on, but it has, we are the third of 18 in terms of budget relative to the total county budget. And first in the highest average salary. Now, trying to compare apples to apples is not a very easy task because of the way various budgets are set up. Also, like Brandon, I use an example. In Ulster County, the executive has hired various department heads, deputy department heads, that serve in his pleasure and appear on their budgets, not on his budget. But yet, they serve at his pleasure. Now, another thing you have to keep in mind is we have privatized our nursing home, we have privatized mental health, we have privatized workers' comp, and so on. We have approximately one-third less employees, yet that budget has not is increased in the county executives. Very similar argument, I think, that he was using for the controller, that duties have been less. Now, deputy executives and deputy heads, department heads serve at the executive's pleasure. And, of course, the setup is used to control the flow of information. Like we just found out today. You didn't know anything about cyberbullying program at all, did we, Mary?
Nope. Yeah. I'm learning as I go. Every
Very
day.
Very good.
For
Where
are
you going?
Years.
Where are you going?
I'm going nowhere fast.
There you go.
That's what I know.
Hell in a handbag is my grandma. Anyway, we take a look at that. This is used to set up the flow, control the flow of information. Legislators and the press have to go through these employees rather than the appointed legislative and legislatively approved department heads. At will employees must stay invested regardless of accuracy. We take a look at the railroad. I use that as an example. The railroad was presented everything about it. It was presented by the deputy department head, and as a result, what the message was constantly that the railroad could never reach Glenford Dyke without millions of dollars, and a significant amount of time. 5 months after they were harping at that, they were at Glenford Dyke with a full train. And another instance is dealing with the family court. Information is not shared. We saw it today. It was not shared. We found out about it, that they do have some type of cyber bullying program. I knew nothing about it. A lot of that has to do with this setup and this other sort of brand, this other layer of government, the one that you have to go through constantly in order to get any information, as opposed to those that we actually listen to. They're appointed, and we approve those appointments and department heads. So if you take a look at it on the back, there's rankings. Again, I have to say it is a work in progress, but this is what I've got thus far. And if we take a look at these, we see that we are far above the average or the norm per capita, budget in the executive department. That's why I was calling for a cut in there of the amount. It actually put them a little more in the middle. Go ahead.
Hector?
Thank you, Chair. So just so I just am clear, so I just actually understand, are you cutting a full position? Are you spreading out among several positions? Because I just want to make sure that it's clear.
That's up there. That's the way he does that. What comes in yet?
As you noted, and I don't want to belabor any points, it's not always apples to apples, just in terms of, like, for example, Monroe County has got almost, you know, $1 billion, but their executive appropriation is $477, but there's no number of staff given. I mean, there's no way a county, there's no way a county of that size is going to have just $477,000 worth of...
That's what's in their budget.
I understand that, but there's actually no staff, meaning how these things are accounted for. I mean, I give you credit, you noted that. You know, how they're accounted for does not always match up.
Right.
So...
Okay.
Yeah, just wanted the committee to know, in 2010, the exec staff had nine positions, currently is seven, which is a 22% reduction in staff. I will say, too, one thing Legislator Donaldson and I have looked at other budgets, too. Other executives put half a salary in one department in another and such.
So well, we do that. We do that too.
Well, we don't split a person up.
No, you don't do that. But what you do is have deputy department heads that are serving the pledge, which are basically the same thing as being there.
Every department, they do and they don't.
They have to be appointed. They have to be approved by the legislature.
Correct, but then they serve at the pleasure.
So that becomes a
term. To be four hundred term, they left it.
Are there any other questions?
I just gave it to you. That way, at least you have some understanding of it. And my take on it is,
Amendment number nine.
Which one is that?
Number nine is performing arts.
Mid-Hudson.
Actually, we put this together, but we had some discussion. I don't know if anybody emailed you back in reference to it. But this has been, we ended up not being able, we didn't discuss it in committee, I will say that. I talked to Mary Warrow, she didn't have a problem with putting this in. Because we got caught up in so many other things, the cyberbullying one, and we actually really didn't do our duty, shall we say, and discuss this part of it. But this has been an ongoing thing. We've been trying to get the money to the arts back up to where the legislature used to fund it in the past. And we've been trying to get it back, moving it slowly back up. As I've always said about the arts, it's the best form of economic development. It's the type of economic development that is very, in other words, it's environmentally friendly, and it's very people friendly, and it's.
What did we fund them at last year?
$65 million.
Oh, same this year.
Yeah, so we're asking for a slight increase. Which, like I said, we've been trying to move this back up to where the funding once was in the past. So we've been doing it a little bit at a time, and that's been the program. If you take a look, we've looked at it a little bit last year before, too. So basically, the other ones, we have not been jumping as much as we had at certain points. But they were the ones that were cut the biggest back in 2004, back in that era when we were really... strapped coming off of 10% tax increase, and we were pretty strapped. We were doing, cutting basically everybody's stuff.
So I would just also add the 65 that's currently in the executive's proposal, it's flat from last year's. And I, commend the executive office for being supportive of this program. The 10% increase gets them to the level they requested, as is highlighted in the memo I passed out. I also want to talk about the process in which these funds are distributed. One, if you look at the list of projects that were funded last year, it is throughout Ulster County, Rosendale, Saugerties, Woodstock. It's a countywide program. The funds are distributed through a competitive grant process, but they also go a step further. It's not just distributed at, the whim of Arts Mid-Hudson. It's competitive, and they also offer trainings before that process to help not-for-profit arts organizations that might not be as in tune with applying for competitive grants. They actually hold trainings throughout the county to help them complete their application.
And one of the other things they've been attempting to do is also encouraging the idea of collaboration between different artist groups to actually come up with programs.
Right.
And the very ones that decide who that's going to get funded, as it's totally out of the legislature's hands. It's in the hands of the artists. And the artists, they bring in a panel of artists that actually weigh each one and look at it. Now, up until the other thing is what we looked at this year was maybe one another reason why we wanted to pump it a little bit. Was that we've had a process that we did not want to refund anyone. In other words, what we're trying to do is get people always self-sustaining. And that's the idea, So in other words, if we give you this $4,000 to come up with this particular program, we want you to be able to fund it yourself in the future. So in other words, like for instance, the festival, The Voice is one of the ones that we put money into, and everybody knows how that is like an unbelievable thing, brings in thousands and thousands of people up and finish it every year now. So it was well and we don't put any money into it anymore, but it was, you know, it was good what we did. But we found out also, and after discussions with them, that, you know, there are certain things that are not going to be self-sustaining, that are still doing great things, like some of the dance programs. You know, they're not going to be totally self-sustaining, even though they may bring in a lot more because of, you know, the little bit of money we give them. So we do, and there is a small amount that we say, okay, you can, things that you really feel that need to continue. So that was the other part of that, the other reason why we wanted to increase that extra 10%. And that's the other reason why they requested that much more.
Hector?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Despite the insult borne to New Paltz by the legislator from Woodstock, I remain open-minded.
Well, there's no artist down there.
Apparently. Wow, I guess I'm a no on this one, huh? So,
hey, I went to school there for many
years.
That's
all right. New policy's not there. 20 years. So, the question I have is, this $24,000, I guess, is basically going towards, out of the $71,500, $24,000 is going to staff?
Yeah, well, they say staff aspect, and that what they do is they're the reach outs, and they're the ones that advertise for the artists. They do, so there is a small amount that's going out. Yeah.
It's not a small amount. That's
well,
that's
it,
a
it is. It's also part of the administration.
And we're also talking about training programs that I discussed in terms of applying for the grants. $24,000. For
cost,
I don't think
it's
that out of this world.
Any other questions? Tracy,
sorry. Just on that note, have you seen or do you have available the numbers? Because this is an outline of the Ulster Legislature for Arts with Mid-Hudson. I'm curious what percentage of their total funding is going to also
all of them.
I'm saying I want to know what part of the big picture, because in theory there should be money, they should have money, they could have money that's not derived from Ulster legislature but a Ulster project that they fund.
They get
no
decentralization
idea.
Funds from MISCO.
Yeah, so I'm just and more importantly this 24,000.
Oh, the other point is, I'm sorry, the 24,000 also is what they're doing is leveraging other money.
Right, that's what I want to know. So right. 24,000 is part of what whole?
It's part of the leveraging. Right, it's part of the leveraging of other money from programs that I think Jennifer knows more about those type
right
of
now.
Programs than I do. I mean, she could run them off the top of her, and I believe the county executive also funds a, I don't know if you fund Mid-Hudson Arts, do you?
It's through the request. So
But the county executive has also funds that go to the arts, other programs.
Yeah.
And that's what, to add to that, this is, you know, the basic, of basic funding of the arts. So I think a 10% increase on top of $65,000. If you look at it in terms of economic development, it's not that much of an increase because this is a competitive industry. You know, we're competing with counties like Dutchess County, who has Dia Beacon. You know, you have Rhinebeck. We're also now competing with counties like Columbia County, who has a thriving arts scene brewing in Hudson. The numbers are in the memo, what, you know, the arts get back in terms of tourism dollars and economic dollars in Door County, especially amongst our towns and our villages.
Right, and like it's said, like we're pointing at, I'm sorry, but it wasn't leveraging.
Anyway, you were thinking about your apology with RuPaul, so
now you work on it.
RuPaul
has one of the best art programs in the country.
So we can incorporate it into the pool somehow.
Or any other questions?
I went to school there.
So I can answer your question if you're
interested.
Sure. Their revenue is $1,584, of which $352,000, that's their $990. So
we would be
what's about budget. So what portion of their budget, it's about...
We would be under the $150,000.
No, I'm asking what portion of their budget is
for staffing.
We would
be under the
$150,000.
Yeah.
Versus...
So we're roughly
10%
of the program.
Are there any other questions?
So this funding, as Don much quickly did the math, would be about 10% of their program budget.
I want to also just point out that in the first year,
Sometime about eight or nine years ago.
Oh. When Ulster County lost its funding from NISCA, and the legislature was convinced by the tourism committee to commit $50,000, Hartsman Hudson did the funding for, they did the whole administration of the program for $2,500. So for several years, they've been doing this at an extremely low amount. Outrageous amount for what they're delivering. Not to mention, in the I Love New York studies of tourism for Ulster County, the arts are the first, second, third, and fifth driver, top drivers of tourism to the county. So we're getting a big return on our investment.
I agree.
All right. Thank you. Number 10, Dave. Amendment number 10, which is... which is removing unneeded funds in the county's general postage line across the countywide mailing.
Well, apparently there was a mailer, what I would refer to as an unscrupulous mailer, but
that to me is somewhat on the, it's not corrupt, but kind of corrupt-minded, but that's another issue, and I don't want to go down that road. But what I will say that they sent out these. I'm playing the Donald Trump game.
I need a break soon.
Anyway, if you take a look at the card that went out for a campaign, well, apparently you won't need that this year because we do not have any ballot initiatives that. So as a result, we should be able to cut that money from the budget, right?
Any questions?
Would you like to say anything about that, Bert?
I just say that if you look at that postage line, it's normally over budget every year because it is high postage line.
Well, maybe you should have saved the $15,000 or more on the budget.
We're not in
$40,000. Well, we don't know.
I'm at 28.
All right. Thank you, Dave.
Is that your last one, Dave?
That's the last one. Chairman Ron.
We know it. We made it.
Listen, I know. I get it.
Number seven. Amendment number seven.
It's me, right?
Yes, you.
Excellent. All right. Thanks for hearing me out. I, as many legislators know, you know, in a budget cycle where there was a lot of belt tightening going on, a lot of people asking for reductions. I asked for a reduction of $50,000 in our budget, which would come from the contract agencies that everyone's trying to increase today. So, you know, it seems every year we increase this particular, you know, these lines. Every year it seems to go up, and you know, of course, you never get asked for less, you know, than before. So the two lines that I'd look to take it from are, first, I'll talk about the Soil and Water Conservation District. You know, Tracy and I have been on the Soil and Water Board, and now it's Tracy and Legislator DeLon. You know, they do a really great job, but there isn't a lot of proper accounting that goes on. So we had Don from the office go down and do, you know, sort of a, you know, 10,000 foot down look at what's going on there. They have somewhere in the area of $700,000 in their various fund balances. You know, they don't have one unappropriated fund balance or one restricted or one unrestricted. They just have a bunch of accounts. It seems like when they do a project, they open an account. And whatever money is left over in the account afterwards stays there and gains interest. So, you know, they've got quite a bit of money there. We give them about $90,000 every year. The $700,000 fund balance is the equivalent of Ulster County having somewhere in the area of an $800 or $900 million fund balance when you talk about economies of scale. So I don't think that it would be a hard hit to have them cover $30,000 out of their fund balance, out of the $90,000 that we give them, which is what I put in this amendment. Also, you know, we've back-ended it, so it's not going to come until their third and fourth quarter payments. And If we learn that there is some that this $700,000 fund balance is some sort of massive accounting error, which I don't think it is, we can always reappropriate that from fund balance. They're a good organization, do a lot of good work. I wouldn't want to put them out of business, based on this. But if there's a place to go with our contract agencies to have a 1 year reduction, I would think that you'd go to the people with, more than two times their annual budget in reserves. And then moving to awareness, we budgeted $20,000 this past year for awareness. They haven't expended any of that money to date. They also haven't complied with the requirements our office has for signing a contract in order to receive, the money that we budgeted for them. I'm not opposed to talking about funding them after they've complied with all the requirements and have spent some money, that we've appropriated for them now. But I don't support having $20,000 in the budget, having it go completely unspent, and then reappropriating another $20,000 in next year's budget. I think that's bad budgeting. So, yes.
Has anyone reached out to them to find out what's going on?
We've been in pretty constant contact with the organization.
Implementing the programs and just haven't billed?
I mean, Don, if you want to speak
to
that.
We're still in the midst of contract negotiations in November.
What?
Contract negotiations.
So they haven't even finalized
the contract. There was questions regarding what the monies could be spent on, and we had to go back to the resolution as to what was approved by the legislature, and that's pretty much where we still are at the moment.
Carl?
Yeah, I can answer that because I think nowhere in the history of the Nelson County Contract Agency has I seen a such narrowly written contract as that for awareness. It was written so that she could not spend the money because it was written. Now, we appropriated the money for her to hire staff and to expand her program. The contract reads that she can only spend the money on what OASIS approves her to do. And by the way, when we allocated money for her in years past, it was 16 to 24-year-olds. OASIS is the way that... It wasn't even a contract with OASIS. It was just the approval from OASIS that the fee was approved between 16 and 20-year-olds. So that took a huge part of her business because she's in and that's where she spent the money the last couple of years. So she's in the process of having the contract amended. The other part of it is, since it is a contract...
The OASIS approval amended?
What's that?
She's in the process of having the OASIS approval amended?
No.
Or the
OASIS approves her program.
Yes.
The legislature allocated money for specific things.
Yes, for the OASIS approved program.
No, we did not. The budget amendment was for, she gave us her entire budget. It was for staff. It was for supplies. It was for pizza. Travel expenses, this and that. So she's trying to get the contract amended to be able to spend the money. The other part of it is, and I'm not saying that, first of all, she was all volunteer. She's only a volunteer person. Everything we gave her in the past, she spent to the dime, to the penny. And she's given us a full accounting of what she spent. Well, now she can't accept any money unless she spends the money first. Well, she doesn't have $20,000 to spend to bill the county $20,000.
Right, but she doesn't have to expend $20,000
well,
and
no.
then get reimbursed $20,000.
But it really doesn't matter. So she spends $2,000 and gets reimbursed $2,000. How does that work with staff? How does that work with hiring somebody? You can't hire somebody for their work and then wait net 60 days from the county to pay that person's salary that comes out of her pocket. I mean, the whole reason for me asking for money for the program was that she could help people. And the contract is only squeezing her and making her bankrupt. And that's why she's amending the contract so that the money that we agreed to give her for staff, for supplies, for her program can be used in that way. And then also...
So you're saying up front?
No. I understand that Department of Finance is willing to give her some upfront money to get started out of that $20,000 once the contract is amended and signed. So it's got nothing to do with she doesn't have the business because she's been doing this all along. The problem is the contract. And I'm not a lawyer. And I'm not a member of her board or even any way associated with it. But it has been come to my attention that she hasn't been able to do what she can because, A, she's afraid to sign the contract because if she signs the contract the way it is, it basically puts her out of business. That contract was written to put her out of business. I haven't seen any contract for Family of Woodstock or any scope of work that had to be done in any contract that was so narrowly written and so maliciously, I might add.
And who maliciously wrote this contract,
wrote
Carl?
The contract.
The Office of Contract Management, obviously.
They differ. The contracts differ for each agency?
This is drafting a contract to implement the things that the of what services you want to provide.
Okay. Well, that's not the case. She just wants to sign a contract so she can do what she's doing, alcohol awareness.
But the non-OASIS approved program is what you're talking about, right? Because the OASIS approved program is the crux of the issue.
There is no program. OASIS doesn't have a program for alcohol awareness. They just approve people to be providers of an alcohol awareness program. They don't have a program that says this is what you have. She has.
So what service? So we're talking in very vague terms here. So let's drill down to exactly what she's doing that she wants us to fund that we won't fund through the contract or that we didn't approve to fund through our resolution.
Well, first of all, there's nothing in the OASIS contract that says she can pay employees.
Is there something in there that says she can't?
No, there isn't. You know what? If I knew that you had put this in, because it only came out yesterday, okay, you must have put a placeholder in your amendment because it never said awareness.
I was still looking at the different contract agencies.
Because if you're asking me about the contract, I could probably get a contract. If I would have known yesterday that this was going in, I could have asked her to come and explain it herself. And I could have supplied a contract for you to read, and you'd see how ridiculous it was. Now, maybe Don has a copy of the contract.
He does, because he's the one who's been trying to work with her very hard, by the way, to get the contract implemented, to get it signed, back and forth.
Right. Well, the contract, like I said, she wants to get the contract amended. Apparently, she's got...
It's my understanding that our office has provided her with options to that would allow her to give some sort of compensation to the folks that she wants to compensate for their volunteers or for their work in the program.
Well, she can't do anything unless she can't bill the county unless the contract is signed. So my understanding is that she asked if she could pay salaries and she asked how she could pay those salaries. You know,
I believe that options were provided to her.
That's right, but she can't bill the county for it if the contract isn't signed. And she's not going to sign the contract unless she can amend it. That's the process.
What amendment does she want? You seem to know that she won't sign the contract because she wants it amended. Do you know what amendment she wants to it?
The contract specifically states that she can only serve kids between the ages of 16 and 20. Her program, I even think she goes from 14 to 24.
What's that?
It's an underage drinking program. Right? Underage drinking helps someone who's...
It's not an underage drinking program. It's an awareness program.
Getting involved in alcohol and providing awareness and education to get them away from alcohol. That's the program.
Well, again, like I said, if I would have known this amendment was in, we could have given her the opportunity to explain exactly.
I'll tell you what Carl.
Instead of having an executive, a deputy county executive, try to explain a program that he knows nothing about.
I'll issue a challenge to you, okay? find $20,000 in this area where we can cut, or I mean, you know, again, the finishing of my presentation, you know, was going to be I put forward the reductions, you know, to close the $50,000 reduction. if there's no will to close it, or if there's a will to close it in a different way, or if there's no will to close it, we'll have to take the money out of contingency. But, probably where the rest of the money that has been proposed today is going to come from if it's approved. But, or find another source of it. I'm fine with that.
Well, Soil and Water has $780,000 in their fund balance.
Okay. We don't,
only
we're
took,
not.
You only took $30,000 out of that fund.
All right, Jim, first. Jim.
Back up. He asked me for a challenge.
Yes.
I'm just answering him.
So I can understand this.
It's about $700,000, and yes.
Is money they've accumulated?
In theory,
over a period of time?
Yep.
Okay. I mean, I'll be honest, I've done a lot of work with them with flooding project studies. They do a lot.
They do.
Throughout the county.
We're going in order of hands up. Dave was down.
I'm not sure if we need to make those cuts, but any of them. But I mean, maybe in this case here with the awareness program, I know that I spoke with the and I thought that she would have an opportunity to explain herself. I understand that much of it is an awareness underage drinking, but that's not all they do because, it's for driving. It's a little more of a comprehensive program. And they do deal with people that are over 21. Just because you're 21, you can drink doesn't mean they talk about, we often use these arbitrary numbers like 21.
Does Oasis?
And 18 and 16. And, these are arbitrary numbers that we use for legal purposes. But having said that, sometimes this type of things blend into more than just that. Now, because Oasis has a specific set, that doesn't mean that we have to live with Oasis's specific set if we feel there's a need somewhere else.
Well, our resolution specifically funded her for Oasis-approved programming, or Oasis programming.
Vicky went to go get a copy of the resolution.
Funding, I believe, because we almost doubled it say that we were going to, that was going to be included.
Well, I don't know if that, did it say an Oasis-approved program? Is that what it said in the funding? I don't know.
Vicky's going to get the resolution. Now,
Tracy.
So I'm just asking if that's the case.
Well, when they bring the resolution in, you'll find out. I mean, you're saying maybe.
A couple things. First of all, since voting, that's one thing we as a committee could entertain. Speaking to the Soil and Water money, because Ken and I have been talking about this, the balance, but also the bigger issue of accounting. And in fact, board member, I've mentioned to the legislature, the legislature was going to fund an audit. I'm going to work to get the board to fund an audit, but it's not a bona fide audit. I mean, I think they need an auditing firm. All that said, the reality is that let's just call it $700,000. We right now do not know for sure how much of it's encumbered, required that they show a local match for their state funding, and Ken's acknowledged that all of that is, those are real concerns that we need to figure out and we plan to iron out in the next, week. I need to reach out to the chair of the board. I'm assuming Ken spoke to Gary today.
I reached out to him. He was not in the office.
Okay, so there's going to need to be multiple conversations that will be brought back to this committee, which I agree with you. But outstanding work, and while their financial controls need to honor, we need to understand that.
I don't know if bringing it to order, I think you need to understand.
Both. But that's they're two separate thoughts, I believe. So we need to find out about
there needs to be an audit, whether the board pays for it or the legislature pays for it. Somebody needs to pay for it.
It was committed that the legislature was going to pay for it. This fiscal year.
Turned out to be a lot more money than we expected it was going to be.
Yeah. So, and we talked about that in the audit committee for those who weren't, and in Ways and Means several times. All this has been on the level, but I do think that potentially, based on conversations over the next week and based on the will of the committee, both those organizations could explain the situation.
Okay, Bertie?
The wording in the resolution did not include. I'd just like us to think of whether it's bullying or substance abuse and lives were saved. That's a huge benefit. And I just think we
jump on, you know, to, for example, like family, that can handle a little bit of, so I agree with Legislator Bartel's proposal to give them the opportunity to be heard and heard it differently as compared to others in terms of availabilities or the use of the funds. I'd like to see that information.
I believe that that was proved. I believe that they said that that was not accurate, that it was that the cash flow wasn't available.
No.
Legislators have the right to see things.
That's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Hector.
Oh, it is. I'm sorry. It is.
It's
an awareness program, but it's not requiring that it be within the awareness, the constraints of the OASIS program.
Right. The explanation as to why the additional.
Hector.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not requiring it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Chairman Ronk.
Yep.
You know, I'm not afraid to go tell you when you're wrong. And in this instance, though, just so you know, I don't think it's unreasonable with what you proposed. However, I will just, of course, caution. And I think in that regard, we know we need to have OASIS, awareness rather come here to talk with us.
That's fine.
Visibly, this committee. But I want to make sure that people understand, you know, this is not the first time that we've had problems in terms of settling on a contract or getting some things settled. You know, this has been a long-standing issue. This is a multi-year sort of, not quite saga, but, you know, it's one of these things where I'm also just saying it's not, what you propose is not unreasonable. I appreciate that you put it forward. I will also just say is that, again, that further caution, Tracy already said it better than I could, which is we all know with soil and water, while there have been accounting issues, we also know that there's a lot of different layers that get put into that.
And it's like I said, I'm not opposed to making sure that the money gets back in if it's 100% if it's necessary for their budget, because it's a great organization who does great work.
So you may need to also, though, just at this point, considering that you've got a $50,000 sort of cut, you know, it may have to come from somewhere else. And I'm just saying you may need to.
I mean, in the end, you know, we've got, you know, I want to say 20, 30, 40, 50, somewhere around $50,000 in increases have been proposed here today, I think.
And I got one.
So, you know, and that's not even for a contract agency just for legislative appropriations, we've got another $50,000 we want to spend.
Sure.
If that's the way the legislature wants to go, that's the way the legislature wants to go, and we'll have to appropriate this $50,000 from fund balance. So, that's,
or elsewhere.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I just want to also say, and I said it when the resolution came up a couple months ago, and I'm not specifically saying about that agency. I don't care what agency it is. Everybody knows I don't want to fund anything at this point. I am very consistent every year, I have to say. But there was a resolution passed a few months ago to give more money. This is what this process is for. Because as we all saw today, there are other prevention programs. And to be fair, I think we should touch on all of them, and we should have some sort of plan instead of randomly saying, oh, we feel so bad, let's just give more money to this one. It doesn't work like that. That's what this is for. This is our learning tool, and to distribute money accordingly.
And I just want to
say, let's not do that anymore.
This amendment, you know, on awareness in particular, I know it's struck a nerve with Legislator Belfilio, but it's not about the efficacy of the program or whether it's a worthwhile program or not. It's about there's $20,000 sitting in the budget that's gone unused, and I'm not in favor of seeing it happen again next year. So if we can settle the contract issue, I'm not necessarily opposed to revisiting funding for the organization in the future. But the contract right now sits unresolved. So
Mary Beth, we do have a policy. Okay, unfortunately we don't follow the policy that we have, but there is a policy that we've been using for many years. Some people have been circumventing the policy, unfortunately, but there is a policy. And it goes through Dave's committee, and it comes back to the way it means. Tracy, last statement on this.
And I think to Mary Beth's point about, I'm going to put sort of a broader approach and a larger policy, I don't think Mary Beth was just, I think the way to handle that really is to start on January 2. We've got to begin through the committees. We have to start having these conversations. Of course, something like an unresolved contract, you don't find out until the end. But I think we need to start talking about our approach to the capital fee at the start of the year and be working through. Otherwise, we're responding
to budgets, and we're picking at, you know, individual items. It happens in the committees, but so much of what we do in the committees, frankly, are approving contracts and dealing with specific contracts. It's not a proactive. We're not having necessarily these larger discussions that I think Harry Beth was.
I think we all understand what the problem is.
I agree with you.
Well, let's work on it to resolve the problem for next year, so we don't come back November next year and doing the same thing. All right, next.
Next.
Mr. Allen.
Oh, you all have
this is amendment number 3.
Just throwing piggies.
Back in the place.
Yeah.
Chris Allen announced
himself. What an entrance.
There you go. You're good.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Mr.
Before you start, is it in the budget?
It is not.
It is not, okay.
Yeah, I heard a discussion about that.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, my colleagues in the legislature. Chairman Jeremy.
Speak louder.
It's not been on all day.
All right, so I don't need the mic. Okay, this is the Esopus Bend, the Esopus Creek Conservancy. I brought with me a guest here today, an esteemed guest. We have Leanne Thornton. She happens to be a Town of Saugerties board member. She is an educator, a school teacher in Columbia County, and she's also the head of this organization. This organization, in my district, it's an interesting geographical point in Ulster County. It's where the Esopus starts or ends, depending on how you want to look at it, and it feeds into the Hudson River. And there's protected wetlands area. There's a lot of woods that are associated with this. There's beautiful trails where people can hike. They have educational programs that are affiliated with this organization where they have a summer camp program for boys and girls. It's affiliated with the boys and girls programs of Saugerties and Kingston. And it's also affiliated with the Saugerties School District, where they have an educational program. They teach about the water and soil. They teach about the Esopus Creek and the Hudson River. It's been a major issue with the turbidity that's been an issue in this county for quite some time. This program is a benefit to tourism in Ulster County, in the Saugerties area, because it draws people in to hike and participate in the programs that are offered year-round, mostly from spring till fall. I brought Ms. Thornton with me to describe. She can take the floor, and she'll better explain it than I will.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to come this afternoon. As Chris said, my name is Leanne Thornton. I've been with the Esopus Creek Conservancy for the last, probably got involved about 12 years ago. The Conservancy is located in Barkley Heights, the land area itself. It's about 160 acres of property. And it was 12 years ago basically overgrown. It was ATV deluxe. And any kids that grew up over in Barkley Heights, they knew the land because it was a great place to party, swing from the vines into the creek and hang out. And a lot of the parents of students that are involved that go on to the preserve now, they get a totally different perspective of it. We had volunteers with Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, the Kiwanis Club, and just the community in general to drag refrigerators, cars, you name it. It had been a dump. It had become an area of the community that was, for years and years, had been a popular place to dump your refuse. If you go to the preserve today, you see a totally different perspective. We left one little Volkswagen, my Girl Scout troop at the time. They said, we need to leave that natural habitat because of the animals that were kind of making it their home. And that's the only vehicle that is still on the property. Over the years, we've had grants from the Land Trust Alliance that have helped us do a boardwalk down onto the creek itself so students can come down and do water samples. We built several bridges on the property. If you go on our website, basically you can see the area. Through the Catskill Center, which holds the easement on the property, I was able to incorporate an education program with the Saugerties School System to include third grade teachers through high school to take a look at the curriculum that's called Catskill, A Sense of Place. So it introduces the history of the Hudson Valley through history and the environmental issues that we deal with here in the Hudson Valley through their school program. Every third grader in the Saugerty School District takes a field trip in the spring and fall to the Esopus Bend Preserve and to Falling Waters, which has recently just been purchased through Scenic Hudson. We were a partner with the sisters who own the property in Saugerty, and that preserve, Falling Waters, maybe some of you have hiked it, is absolutely stunning area because it's right on the village. The bend is the opposite. We're farther up on the creek area. So students get to really see two different natural habitats within Ulster County. As far as our partnership with the Boys and Girls Club, this started 2 years ago when one of our board members at the time was the director of the Boys and Girls Club there. And he said, you know, we have so many students and so many kids who are here after school that this is their safe haven. This is where they are on the weekends. And we decided, why not get them out in nature? These are kids that, you know, you need to get away from the technology. They have almost like an environmental dysfunction. They don't know the beauty of hiking. And if you don't get the kids out there when they're young, they're never going to appreciate the beauty that we have here in Saugerty and in Ulster County. So we partnered with the Boys and Girls Club. We have an educator, environmental educator, and this is what basically the grant money that we're hoping to get will help continue to fund this program. The kids have a wilderness camp, wilderness experience during the summer. It's a 5-week program. We're hoping to extend that to a 6-week program for 2017. There's roughly 50 to 70 kids who participate that, ages 8 to 13. We also run a program for the Boys and Girls Club where they are out. There's all the Saugerty schools, the after-school program. The kids go twice a week, and they do an activity on the preserve. So their environmental experiments, they do artwork, art design, they're writing poetry. It's a whole interdisciplinary approach to involve kids in nature. Aside from the fact that the preserve is also a good tourist economic site for this county, because it's free. It's open dawn to dusk.
I apologize. We're 10 on time.
Okay. So the grant is $5,500. That's what it cost us to run the program. Part of that is $95 a week for porta potties. I don't want them, going au naturel in the woods. So, that's part of what goes into that. I didn't bring a budget breakdown, but I certainly can get that for you. But our goal is to keep the program going. Mr. Allen approached us. I had him come to my board meeting, BCC board meeting, a month ago. And we don't have a land trust grant to continue it for next year. We're really looking for any help. We are doing fundraising. It's an all-volunteer board, and all the money we raise comes from appeals. And we did Artist Opus. Maybe some of you heard of that. Artists locally, they do a painting about this size. We had our opening at the Sebsky Gallery on Main Street in Saugerty Saturday night. We sold 17 paintings, which is good because we got to raise the money, and there's no guarantee, And I just don't want to be in the position where we have to go back to Boys and Girls Club and say, we can't really do this program anymore. And that program, just to tell you, because I'm a town board member, I know where you're coming from with cutting. We just cut their funding that the town gives them by $2,800 just to get down to that 2% issue. So,
Hector?
Any questions? Yeah. Go ahead.
That's right. So one of the issues that's going to come up is that this is sort of viewed as like a very regional sort of, program. And also on top of that, you're asking us to, in essence, I guess, fund a goodly portion of it. I mean, how much overall is it going to be for this overall program?
About $5,500 a year is what it runs.
Yeah, but
so
that's
funding the program.
Yeah, so we're funding the whole program. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it's nice to ask for the amount, but, I mean, any amount we would get would certainly help offset what we have to raise.
So part of the issue right now that we've got is you're asking us to fund a full program. The second part is that we normally try to fund things that are the scope of everybody in the county. I mean, that's not always...
Well, the children from Kingston are also involved in this.
Boys and Girls.
It's Boys and Girls Club for all Satanics. It's not just sort of.
No, I'm not being parochial. I'm just saying, you can remember I represent Newport, right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's a thing where it's just like, you know, I've got program. My breakfast is before about Wild Earth. You know, it's sort of my thing where, you know.
35 minutes, Dr. Start bringing some people up. We'll take them.
So I have a personal question.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The first one is a matter of more of county policy, not for you, but then I have questions for you. Mm-hmm. Do we have sometimes the things that we fund that are supposedly countywide?
Answer your question now.
Okay. Because I'd like to understand as a matter of capital P policy, to paraphrase my colleagues.
Yeah. Capital P
or
policy.
Maybe small p. No, it's capital P. For example, Greenway for this fund.
We have an application in for a LTA grant again,
okay.
But they don't always, you know, and we're also, we've got a grant right now that's going to be submitted next week, which covers the program in an expansion of the program to involve more higher level high school age group as well as involving kids and parents and other programs. You know, this is, we had a tree come down and totally destroy the gazebo that Senator Bonasek got state money for us to put that up 10 years ago. It's going to cost us $5,000 to rebuild that whole entrance and to make it safe. Are we going out for grants? Absolutely.
I mean, I don't doubt the merit of the program, and yeah. That's not the issue here. I think it's how money gets spent.
I totally understand.
Yeah, and... I know that Greenway funds has 13 counties last month. 9 of them are to Ulster counties because we have so many active groups that are proposing to us, and we don't need more appropriate source because it doesn't concern itself with county policy, for example, in which you might have voices that haven't set policy on how to spend money for such programs.
Jim?
Who owns the property?
The property basically is owned by the Conservancy, and the Catskill Center holds the grant. And we have a volunteer board of 8 people who basically, you know, we pay the insurance, and it's a independent open space in the town of Torrey.
You said earlier that the town of Torrey just The town
when we first started gave us $10,000 out of the recreation fund.
Every year?
No, one time. That was 12 years ago.
The only basis of town funding is that.
No, when I was talking about the town contributes to the historical society, and it contributes money to the Boys and Girls Club.
Right. No, I understand.
We cut them.
I thought I heard that the town just reduced the funding by
$2,500.
That was $2,800 to the Boys and Girls Club. So, for in other words, the Boys and Girls Club, they cover the cost of the buses to get the kids over to the site. There's parts of this program Boys and Girls Club sponsor. We're paying the salary of the environmental educator, basically. And, you know, Boys and Girls Club, as I said, just got cut $2,800 by the town authority. So for me to say to them, well, Roland, you can pay the educators. They're counting on us to pick up that difference. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your time. And if you get overly stressed out over the holidays, come take a hike in the reserve.
Was this fed into the contract process?
No.
Okay.
To my knowledge, no.
All right. Okay.
And let me ask, one of those funded through the county exec office? Okay. All right. Berkey, would you want to do your resolution, which is number 2? That's the one that's... That's the one with the controller.
Do I want to speak on that?
Well, I mean, it's basically just restoring the position, correct?
Yeah, he spoke earlier.
It's on the list here. I just wanted to make sure that you're comfortable with what we said about it.
But aren't they asking for even more than LA 10?
No.
He's asking for more. Yeah. He's asking for the same number, from my understanding.
Sure.
My understanding, yes.
I have to double check, but I'm fairly certain since everything is budgeted in an appeal listing at the CSEA step increases plus longevity, he's just asking for the $200,000.
But he said 2%.
So are you asking for what he's asking for, or are you asking for 2% more than what he's asking for?
Look,
it's not a flat 2%. It was 2%, I thought, just
I can discuss it again with Janet. If he's asking for less, I don't...
see the point of
that. All right, so what he's asking for, you would be agreeable to.
I would be agreeable to what he's asking
okay.
for.
Okay, that's it? Yeah.
Yeah, but the,
I feel like it was an $11,000 difference.
All right, well, but that's also why I asked the question to begin with, as to whether or not this actually overrides the other.
All right, well,
I asked Kelly, I know.
Can we reconvene after the, I'll go down and see him, and I'll reconvene after the pair. Well,
actually, you can bring him back next meeting. But I mean, right now, you're going to keep it at his level, whatever his level is.
Whatever level he's looking for. Is fine.
Right. Okay. Fine. Yeah, all right. One more before we go. Hold on. We got one more. We got one more.
I know, but it's me. But Rich, it's me. The letter gets some pizza, then we sit
down. No, you can do it right now. It's amendment number one.
No, that one's yours.
Right. That's mine. What's the other one?
There's is amendment 12.
Which one is?
There's some traces.
Yeah. I guess we're going to do resolution number, amendment, I'm sorry, number 12.
Sure.
Tracy and Hector,
no problem.
12.
I got it. So, well, not listen to what it's going to be. I don't care. You sure?
Yeah, they all eat
it. No. Coffee? All right. So I think you're actually all in receipt of God. You really cleared out what I said. So you're actually all in receipt of a letter from Mr. Cajun. Yeah. We are. You probably would have gotten it today. So
what do we got?
It's
on your phone. All right. I'm a mess right now.
No, no worries. I will go and hand this stuff out there.
I probably gave it to him.
No. You have yours. And
no, he's making it thing. No, me, that stuff.
I know.
Super Sun.
What are you doing?
So oh, I got it. No, there's a reason he's not signed by any chance.
Actually, he was just here. I'm assuming it's probably because it was sent over. I actually received it from Mr. Runk. So.
You done yet? Okay, next.
So, long story short, Mr. Chair, we all know how much we spend for our budget audit. Normally that 60,000-65,000 range. You know, we feel, myself and Mr. Bartels, that allocating only 40,000 to this account, we need more. And we know how much this legislature feels like it's flying blind, that we don't have so much information with regards to the things that we're allocating funds to, whether or not those programs are in fact successful or not, whether the outcomes are in fact what we're actually hoping for, right? Certain instances like mental health, we know we save money, but we don't know whether or not outcomes in fact actually improved or not, right? So part of what Legislative Bartels and myself feel is that in order to actually really get that program, you know, off and running, and on top of that, I think to deal with all of our individual questions. I think there's so many legislators who have actually brought ideas to the fore about what things we want to see audited. And, you know, I think that sort of opened up a floodgate when that first $40,000 was announced. So myself and Lisa Bartels felt, let's up it to an even 100,000. So this would be to add 59,000 and take 59,000 from attrition savings.
Tracy, you agree with that, Tracy?
I totally agree.
All right.
You want to add to it?
I hadn't seen Tom's letter until I got here. For me, I think, as Hector said, it's not just for contract agencies, although that, but like you said, outcomes, how do we compare to other counties? I think there's a lot of...
I'm good with that.
We could use unending money to analyze programs, but we have to start juggling. Enough to do at least a huge study.
Well, you know, everything Tracy said, and, you know, I know each of you have probably your own ideas, and I think some of the idea has come out during the course of the process. I know Legislator Belfilio, I know you've been... Oh, sorry.
How come you never call me Legislator Belfilio? You always call me Carl.
Yes.
Maybe because I feel kind of...
Aww. You said maybe, though, Carl.
I'm wondering. Okay. Okay.
Isn't that how you pronounce it?
Don't feel it. Yeah, you're right. Okay, and I was just curious.
That's your only question?
Yes.
Okay.
James. Oh, you answered my question. I've already stated the reasons why I want to see audits.
James?
Just a question. And again, audits, if that's something that, believe me, I think everyone's on everybody's mind. It was done of our controllers office, couldn't they do some of these audits?
This would be for the legislature to be directing these audits. Let me just say that. That's probably the most polite way, I guess, to phrase that.
And I could do a separate, I can answer separately. Yes, but there's so much to look at. And some of it, and I thought of after our audit committee organizations did for other municipalities, that very thorough program audits. We looked at some of those proposals with budget analysis, but they looked at, say, program X, they looked at it against the six neighboring counties of, if we all got in a room and made our suggestions, no way would 150 started. And can I speak to the attrition statements really quickly? So I did call Bert because I was going to propose rather than taking out a contingent whether or not individual positions, because I would be doing it based on length of vacancy.
Right.
But I think there's, I feel very confident if I spent all the many, many dollars.
So, but Jim, partly to the point that you raised, the first instance, you know, look, I have faith in this legislature that we will sort of figure out what we need to know. And I think we for quite some time, we've known we've been sort of flying blind, or we've had to kind of trust, but you want to trust what they're about. And I think that's part of what I have more confident in us as a group, knowing what it is that we need to know than in other parties doing that.
I agree 100% with you.
But that's where we are the ones, because it's us here in this room, it's our body.
These are programmatic.
Yeah.
Let me just add one other thing, too, regarding audits. I know the controller has some issues this year, some concerns this year. I am probably going to suggest to him, and I hope the legislative body would back me and we do it together, that we have a list of different places where he should do audits that we feel are prudent for the county, and that, you know, he will hopefully take our recommendations and some of these suggestions that he would do either in-house or outside of house, that he would do some of these audits.
Yes.
In addition to what you're doing here, right?
I know. And Mr. Chair, you actually, I think you know how much affection I have for you, but every so often you get my, because when you bring that up.
You said you ate already.
When you bring that up, though, think on it. You know, for the first time, you know, I've been a legislator now for, this is, next year will be going on 14 years, right? But the comptroller has been comptroller for 8 years, or going on 8 years at this particular point, right? This is the first time that we've ever gotten an email from the comptroller's office asking us for input. Now, mind you, have I provided input to him over the years? Of course, I think you all probably have individually. But this is where, for the first time, we are actually able, with what's being proposed, the first time where we are actually able to kind of control our own destiny, to actually go and actually say, look, we know we need certain information in order to understand what it is that we're funding. And there's millions of dollars that we fund, and that we don't know what's happening with those individual programs. End of rant. I apologize.
Any other questions? Bert?
I mentioned this to Tracy, too, the cautionary tale. As you know, attrition vacancies replenish our fund balance when we don't spend them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as I say, using that attrition as could be dangerous. I know the intent here, but if, you know, the legislature were to go, you know, increase it more, that fund balance won't be replenished as it was.
Well, hopefully with this, we'll be able to identify additional savings, and maybe that'll help the balance things out.
Plus, we've got so many amendments here that we have to save money here, Burr. We have so many amendments that we saved money. We've got a ton of money that we can put in contingency.
I don't know. These amendments do or take a lot from your contingency.
What's that?
In the end, we hope the Ways and Means Committee will work with us to identify these
openings. I'm sure we will be more than happy to.
We're going
to
work as well as you with you as you do with us. Listen, you take it how you got to take it, right?
I
know. I think you still
owe me $5. All right, we
have one more amendment.
Oh, we do?
One more amendment.
Lord have mercy.
We have amendment number one, which is mine and TJ, regarding the recommendations of the consultants. It's a net savings of $184,000, increase of contingency from $750 to $934.
Hector.
Any more explanations regarding that?
Found money.
Hopefully it will be, yes. Well, actually, it comes into contingency where we have a little more discrepancy over. Hopefully, we can all set a few things.
Yeah.
All right. So, any questions? If not, what our next step's going to be
Not tomorrow.
We have scheduled for the next 3 days or 2 days, tomorrow and next Monday for the meeting. We accomplished everything we had to regarding amendments. Now we have to finalize everything. We will have a meeting on December 5th at 3 o'clock.
What are the
dates? December 5th, 3 o'clock. It's a Monday. For come back to go over all these amendments, vote yes or no to the amendments, make a recommendation to the legislative body. In that time, we're going to invite the people that we said throughout the afternoon that we need them to be present to have some explanations about the various amendments. 3 o'clock Monday, December 5th.
Can we just check that? I can't say for sure. I can come. It's not.
Okay, tentatively we'll set up our.
Yeah,
don't forget,
I'll
we have
tomorrow.
To have it done by December 7th.
We can't do later than that because we need a day to
No, I get it, but it's not fair that I sat here listening to
the
speech.
We need a day to get it done. Well, I'll tell you what.
Tomorrow,
can't no,
be later in the day.
Can't be later in the day either.
Wait a minute.
We have public health that evening, and we figure you're probably going to need 2 to 3 hours to get the votes in.
All right, listen. You contact Don tomorrow if you cannot make it. We'd have to do it the week prior.
I believe I can. I'll contact you if I can.
I can't schedule, but...
Well,
there was a rules committee meeting that Monday, too, but early. Monday the 28th.
What?
28th.
3 o'clock, December 5th.
I'm good for the 5th.
All right.
No.
You need anything, contact Don. Any questions?
Motion to adjourn.
Everybody fine? Okay, motion to adjourn second. All in favor? Thank you very much. Have a nice Thanksgiving.
Oh, stop it.